about identity. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
At the truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of truths.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor.
Hi.
5 years ago today, a scene of unimaginable horror.
Come on.
Okay.
You guys okay?
Okay.
Follow me, follow me.
The lucky ones got out of the crumbling Twin Towers. Today, in Lower Manhattan...
Bells preceding one of the four moments of silence here at Ground Zero at the exact moments 5 years ago when the planes hit the Twin Towers and when the buildings collapsed. Former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani.
God bless all of those that we lost. God bless all of you who mourn for them, remember them, and live on in their spirit. And God
Ira
bless America.
Beck. Minette Marie Beckles. Carl John Bedigian. Michael.
The names of the nearly 2,800 victims were read aloud by family members. At Ground Zero, Jim Chenevy, CBS News.
This is Jim Crissell in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The rolling countryside of the Keystone State bathed in the haunting sound of Amazing Grace. Hundreds have gathered to remember the victims of Flight 93 who perished here while challenging their hijackers. Frank Werer lost a granddaughter.
It's nice to be here with all the other family members, and it's very comforting to be here and to know that everybody realizes that this is a very important day for all of us.
President and Mrs. Bush laying a wreath and consoling, comforting, uplifting the now extended family.
President Bush visiting Ground Zero and Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and the Pentagon today, laying wreaths, but saying nothing. That's for this evening, a national address, 3 hours from now.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House. In his address to the nation, President Bush will issue another call for national resolve in the war on terror. He will say America did not ask for this war and that, like every American, he too wishes it was over. He will call it a struggle for civilization that requires national unity. He will say Americans must put aside differences and work together to meet the test that history has given us. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
America! Sweet America!
This is Steve Futterman at Los Angeles International Airport. As a choir made up of TSA employees sang patriotic songs, officials at LAX held a brief memorial service. Three of the four flights on 9/11 were on their way here, but never made it. One of those attending the service, Bob Bush, chief pilot for American Airlines, who remembered a fellow pilot.
Proud to stand here for Chick Burlingame today.
It was a moving event, even for those who didn't know any of those killed. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles International Airport.
America!
Closing numbers at the markets today. The Dow finishing up nearly 5 points, closing at 11,396. The NASDAQ finishing up 7.5. This is CBS News.
Now, how can it be? You put up a sign, you just wait for the offers to roll in. It becomes a second job.
Getting the house appraised and the comps.
The money that you think you're going to save, you end up losing.
I've bought and sold homes before, and now the first thing I do is call a realtor.
Realtors have the experience to price your home so it can sell for up to 16% more than selling it yourself.
Using a realtor is a smart financial decision.
Get the facts straight about selling your own home. Talk to an agent, and be sure to ask if that agent is a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
It's way too risky to sell your house on your own.
Hi, I'm Sterling Marley, driver of the number 14 Waste Management Chevrolet.
And I'm Bill Lester, driver of the number 23 Waste Management car.
You know, we're just two drivers of a team of 30,000.
That's because our team at Waste Management has drivers and pit crews all over the country.
So if you're revved up for a new career, call Waste Management at 877-220-JOBS.
Call now and get it in gear.
From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green, think Waste Management.
Call 877-220-JOBS today.
We're all thinking today of the events of 5 years ago. What if you're getting on a plane today? What are you thinking?
The friendly skies were a little intimidating for passenger Cheryl Washington.
Especially today, I'm kind of anxious.
But she seemed to be the exception here.
I feel pretty confident.
I think we're a lot safer now than we used to be.
The security is here in place and feel very secure.
Since the terror attacks, there have been many changes from what passengers can carry on planes to armed air marshals. It's all reassuring.
But you can never say 100% what's going to happen. Just pray and hope, you know, for the best.
Heather Bosch for CBS News near Seattle.
Well, now comes the real work for the Atlantis astronauts. Now that the shuttle has successfully docked with the International Space Station, the two hooking up after the shuttle performed some space aerobatics today. The Atlantis doing a floating backflip so the crew on the space station could photograph the shuttle's belly, confirming there's no damage during the liftoff. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
At Romano's Macaroni Grill.
You know, when you want to take a break.
And now, it's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
All of those that we lost. God bless all of you who mourn for them, remember them, and live on in their spirit. And God bless America.
3:07, 7 minutes after 3 o'clock. Welcome to the Monday edition of Enid Live on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel. Today is the 5 year commemoration, if that's the right word, of 9/11, and the airwaves have been filled with it, and there are lots of questions to ask and lots of people to talk to, and we'll be doing some of that today in today's broadcast. As always, calls to Enid Live are toll free. If you're in the 916 area code, it's 349-1320, and if you're not, 866-626-1320. You can email me, enid@kctc.com. And you can access us on the web at 1320leftchannel.com, and I am yours from 3 to 7. And we have quite a lineup for you this week. Today, we will be joined by Michael Isikoff of Newsweek magazine and David Corin of The Nation magazine, and they have written a book called Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. So I can't think of a more appropriate day for both of them to join us, because this book has hardly been reviewed, but it has been widely quoted all over the place because it breaks new ground and it reveals new information that we really didn't know anything about. We're going to be joined tomorrow by Francine Prose, will be my guest, and her book will be on the New York Times bestseller list next Sunday. The book is called Reading Like a Writer, A Guide for People Who Love Books and for Those Who Want to Write Them, which I think is a lot of us. Wednesday, Wayne Slater, who is a reporter for the Dallas Morning News, and James Moore have written a book about Karl Rove called Architect, Karl Rove and the Master Plan for Absolute Power. And in this book, it is revealed that Karl Rove's stepfather is gay, and a lot of other information about Karl Rove that's pretty amazing, such as that he's an agnostic, lots of other stuff that make all of his subsequent behaviors kind of more and more curious. Thursday, Nora Ephron, whose book is number one on the New York Times bestseller list, will join us, and her new book is called I Feel Bad About My Neck and Other Thoughts on Being a Woman, a collection of essays, and it's her first collection in about 20 years. She has written the screenplays for Sleepless in Seattle, When Sally Met Harry. I think she directed Silkwood. She has had an amazing career. And Monday, Pulitzer Prize winner and National Book Award winner Edward P. Jones has a new book out called All Aunt Hager's Children. So these are all of my guests are at four o'clock hour. So that's what's coming up on Enid Live. The question I think I want to begin with on a day like this one, and there was something in me that almost didn't, you know, it's if you'll pardon the expression, it's like overkill. But in 5 years now after the fact, 5 years after 9/11, 5 years after that time, they used to say everybody knew where they were when President Kennedy was assassinated. Now they say everybody remembers where they were when they heard the news about 9/11. My question is, 5 years out, are we any better? Are we any safer? Have we learned any lessons? And this, I think, can be our theme throughout the broadcast today. Are we any safer? In what way are we better? In what way have we changed as a society? 349-1320, 866-626-1320. Are we stronger? Do we have more self-confidence as a society? Have we maintained our same level of civil liberties as a society? I mean, these are some of the areas that I want to explore today. And we have a lot to talk about. We have a lot to talk about in terms of local stuff and elections and all kinds of things. But I also want to just begin with this question of how, as a society, how have we changed in these 5 years? How are we different in these 5 years? Well, I can tell you that there is a new poll out. This is a CNN poll. The percentage of Americans who blame the Bush administration for the 9/11 attacks on New York and Washington has risen from almost a third to a half in the past 4 years. This is according to a CNN poll released today. The percentage of Americans who blame the Bush administration for 9/11, the attacks on New York, have risen from almost a third to almost half. So it's gone up from a third to a half over the past 4 years, according to this poll. Asked whether they blame the Bush administration for the attacks, 45% said either a great deal or a moderate amount, up from 32% in June of 2002. But the Clinton administration did not get off lightly either. The latest poll found that 41% of respondents blamed his administration a good deal or a moderate amount for the attacks. That's only slightly less than the 45% who blamed his administration in a poll carried out less than a week after the attacks. Still, most Americans appear to be fatalistic, with more than half, 57%, saying that they think that terrorists will always find a way to launch attacks no matter what the U.S. government does. And that I agree with. The poll was carried out, and they interviewed about, you know, the sampling error is about 3 percentage points on this poll. So more people than before are blaming the Bush administration for 9/11. Here's what I would say if a real leader were leading the country at 9/11. First of all, a real leader would have taken that presidential daily brief of Osama bin Laden determined to strike on American soil more seriously than this administration did. A real administration, a really leader, powerful leadership administration would have taken the words of Sandy Berger and others more strongly in the briefings that occurred in the transition between the Clinton administration and this one. They said to this administration, their words were, "This terrorism is going to be the biggest problem you face." Well, that turned out to be prophetic. But had all of us been asleep at the switch, if we had been the leaders of this country, and the 9/11 did occur as it was planned to occur, then I think in the wake of a tragedy, what a real leader does is a real leader stands up, and a real leader says, you know what, we're down, but we're not out. We've been hit, but we will survive. We will go forward. We will be stronger. We will have learned from this. We are not going to have our legs cut out from us. But that is not what happened in this administration. What happened with this administration is that they found a pretext for two things in 9/11, two of the most salient things. They found a pretext for something that they'd wanted to do anyway, and that was to finish up the business started by George H.W. Bush with Saddam Hussein. They were going to get him no matter what. That's number one. And they were going to reshape the region, something they've been thinking about doing for a long time with maximum hubris and arrogance. And number two, they found a pretext for tax cuts for the richest Americans. And that they got started on September the 12th, if you can believe that. September the 12th. They didn't really lose any time on that one. So all along, they used, if you're a real leader, it seems to me, if you're a real public servant, you're serving the people. The idea of service is an important idea. Part of that idea is the common good takes precedence. But in this administration, which pays lip service to all of those ideas, this administration is only interested in doing what furthers this administration, what lines its own pockets, what gets itself reelected. As Bill Clinton said about using fear to manipulate us, they're trotting out that same old dog that they've trotted out three times before, and it's still got mange on it. So the old dog that they're trotting out is fear. Now, if you are a parent and you are trying to raise a child who you want to be strong and feel empowered, which is usually a word used when women sit around and trash men, they're empowering themselves. But if you want to raise a strong child, what you would want to do is not make that kid scared about everything or manipulate that child with fear, because you would only be trying to promote your own agenda as a parent and continue to make yourself strong so that you could continue to manipulate your child. But if you really cared about growing an independent, strong kid, you wouldn't continue to make that kid frightened. What you would do is you would try to develop in that kid strong muscles of fearlessness, which is not stupidity. People who are fearless aren't dumb, and they don't go into it blindly. They get just as frightened as the rest of us do. But instead of running away from their fear, they inch by inch manage to move through it. So that some people who commit the most fearless acts have moved through their fear. Other people will commit a fearless act without even thinking about it. And we are, our history is littered with moments, or you hear it every so often in a traffic story, in a dangerous, horrible traffic story where, say, somebody's driving along and either something gives way or the car flips over the side into the water, side of a causeway or a bridge or something, and into the water, and somebody will pull up right behind, usually a truck driver, usually a guy, just screeches to a halt and jumps out and tries to rescue at his or her own peril, without even thinking about it, just tries to rescue the person whose car flipped into the drink. I mean, we've all heard those stories. So either people do it, intuitively, without thinking about it, or when you're fearless, sometimes you are very frightened, and you take it seriously. But you begin to inch through it, move through the fear, so that you develop the muscles that when fear strikes, you now have the muscles to handle fear. And that moment could have occurred for us in the wake of 9/11. This was a time when everybody wanted to come together and really wanted to do something. But this is an administration that didn't want us to be even slightly inconvenienced. This was an administration that wanted us to go shopping. That was the advice that we got. 9/11, I mean, I was ready to run away and join the CIA, even though, God knows, I'm sure they wouldn't have had me. I was going to run away and join something to fight for the honor of this country, but I doubt that they would have had me. But I think that was a lot of our impulse, was to, what can I do to help? How can I help? What can I do? It's a war effort. We have to band together. When we do revisit over and over again the period that followed, the New York Times, when sorrow was merged with a sense of community and purpose, the time when we felt drawn together, changed by the shock of what had occurred, lasted long beyond the funerals, ceremonies, and promises never to forget. It was a time when the nation was waiting to find out what it was supposed to do, to be called to the task that would give special, lasting meaning to the tragedy that it had endured. But the call never came. Without ever having asked to be exempt from the demands of this new post-9/11 world, we were cut out. Everything would be paid for with the blood of other people's children and with money earned by the next generation. our role appeared to be confined to waiting in longer lines at the airport. President Bush, searching the other day for an example of a post-9/11 sacrifice, pointed out, listen to this, that everybody pays taxes. That pinched view of our responsibility as citizens got us tax cuts we did not need and an invasion that never would have occurred if every voter's sons and daughters were eligible for the draft. With no call to work together on some effort greater than ourselves, we were free to relapse into a self-centeredness that became a second national tragedy. We have spent the last few years fighting each other with more avidity than we fight the enemy. It would have been a moment for us to find ourselves again, for us to come together, for us to roll up our sleeves, pitch in, and show that we could do it, for us to show that we were down, but we weren't out. And instead, we were asked to do nothing. Other people's children were sacrificed. The advice we got was, go shopping. And the moment was lost. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. So if we had had real leadership here, we would have developed a whole that was greater than the sum of the parts. And instead, we got huge doses of fear to manipulate us into voting the way that this handful of people who took us down this wrong road to begin with wanted us to vote. So fear was what we got. The appearance that some measures were being taken, but more inconvenience. And finally, this administration finished the work that 9/11 had begun, that the terrorists had begun. And that is that this administration is stripping us of our civil liberties. Where a leader like FDR or even Harry Truman might have said, FDR did say, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. We're going to be strong. We're not going to let them cower us. This administration did none of that. It just continued the work, the decimating work of the hijackers. The hijackers started it. We are finishing it. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. So how are we changed after 5 years? I'm Enid Goldstein, and you are listening to the Monday 9/11 edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. Well, on this 9/11, we do have a little bit of traffic going on. It's South End 99 at Fruit Ridge Road. We do have a stalled vehicle there. It looks like it's stopping traffic just a little bit. A vehicle there in the roadway at Northbound I-5 and J Street. We have a three-car crash, Twin Cities Road, just west of Rancho Seco, and a two-car, Twin Cities Road and Clay Station Road. Is that? I'm not sure if they run into each other, do they? Eastbound Mack Road en route to Northbound 99. We have those tonight, 69 highs coming up tomorrow, about 91, 92. We're at 89. Enid Live continues on this special 9/11 edition at AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
It's good for the environment. No air pollution. It's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The LA City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dances are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
New rule. Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320. It's her opinion, and you're entitled to it. Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
It's been a year, Daddy. I really, really miss you. Mommy says we're safe now. A beautiful place called heaven.
Oh, thinking about our younger years.
We have your favorite dinner tonight.
It was only you and me.
I ate it all up.
Young and wild and free.
Even though I don't like cats.
Now nothing can take you away from me.
I learned how to swim this summer.
We've been down that road before.
I can even open my eyes.
That's over now.
I'm underwater.
If you make a man back for more.
Can't you see me?
Baby, you're all that I want. When you're lying here in my arms, finding it hard to believe we're in heaven.
I started kindergarten this year.
Love is all that I need.
That's my first clue's lunchbox.
Oh, what's in your life for someone?
You are the greatest daddy.
We'll turn your world around. Pick you up when you're feeling down. Now nothing can change what you mean to me.
I can swing on the swing by myself. You're pushing me.
Till I will light the way.
Can't you see me?
Baby, you're all that I want. You're lying here in my arms. Finding it hard to believe we're in heaven.
I miss how you used to tickle me.
Love is all that I need.
Tickle my belly. My belly hurts.
It isn't too hard to see. We're in heaven.
I try not to cry.
3:28 on the 9/11 edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 7, 3 to 7 weekdays on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. That was children of 9/11 survivors doing that music that opened this segment of Enid Live.
I want to remind you that you can call, and all calls are toll-free in the 916 area code, 349-1320. Outside the area code, 866-626-1320. You can email me, Enid at kctc.com. And we stream live 1320leftchannel.com. In the next hour, we are going to be joined by Newsweek's Michael Isikoff and The Nation Magazine's David Corn. They have written a book, appropriately enough for today, called Hubris, the inside story of spin scandal and the selling of the Iraq war. The book itself has not been much reviewed, but it's almost anticlimactic to review it because they've broken a lot of new information, and I'm looking forward to talking with them. And they will be joining us in about a half an hour, if all goes well. The question that we are asking on this 5 years after 9/11 is, in what way have we changed? Are we better? Are we worse? Are we stronger? Are we weaker? Let me share with you what Paul Krugman said in today's New York Times. He said, 5 years ago, the nation rallied around a president who promised vengeance against those responsible for the atrocity of 9/11. Yet Osama bin Laden is still alive and at large. His trail, the Washington Post reports, has gone stone cold. Osama and his deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, are evidently secure enough in their hideaway that they can taunt us with professional quality videos. They certainly don't lack for places to stay. Pakistan's government has signed a truce with the Islamic militants in North Waziristan, the province where bin Laden is presumed to be hiding. Although the Pakistanis say that this doesn't mean that bin Laden is immune from arrest, their claims are not very credible. Meanwhile, much of Afghanistan has fallen back under the control of drug-dealing warlords and of the Taliban, which sheltered al-Qaeda before it was driven from Kabul. NATO's top commander has appealed for more troops. The top British commander in Afghanistan has said that the fighting there is fiercer than in Iraq. And the numbers bear him out. Since the beginning of 2006, the NATO force in Afghanistan has had a higher rate of fatalities than that suffered by coalition troops in Iraq. The path to this strategic defeat, Paul Krugman writes, began with the failure to capture or kill bin Laden. Never mind the anti-Clinton hit piece produced for ABC by a friend of Rush Limbaugh, which I think aired last night and part two is tonight. So I'd like your thoughts about that if you saw it. I didn't bother. I was watching Queen Elizabeth II on HBO. It was Queen Elizabeth I part two, to be perfectly meticulous about it. There never was a clear shot at Osama bin Laden before 9/11, let alone one rejected by Clinton officials. But there was a clear shot in December of 2001 when al-Qaeda's leader was trapped in the caves of Tora Bora. He made his escape because the Pentagon refused to use American ground troops to cut him off. So in other words, to say that Clinton had, as this ABC docudrama, this mockudrama, this hackudrama does, that Clinton administration had a clear shot at Osama bin Laden, it did not. But this administration did, and it was in Tora Bora, and they just let him walk. No matter, declared Dickey, I am truly not that concerned about him, he said about bin Laden in March 2002 and more or less stopped mentioning Osama for the next 4 years. A long report in yesterday's Washington Post adds detail to what has long been an open secret. Early in 2002, the administration began pulling key resources, such as special forces units and unmanned aircraft, off the hunt for al-Qaeda's leaders in preparation for the invasion of Iraq. So in Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden is still probably getting his hair and nails done, we pulled all these people out. And here was the scandal at the time, if you will recall. Some of the reporting, and some of it was quite good from Knight Ritter. They were the only ones who were heroic enough. They had a small Washington bureau. And here were all the big, the New York Times, all the Bigfoot media. And nobody got it as right and were as fearless as Knight Ritter, now owned by McClatchy. But they had a smaller Washington bureau than the big feet media, but they really had a lot of, they packed a punch. And part of what they reported was that here were all these special relationships that our special ops people were making with people on the ground, the kind of thing that's preparatory to getting somebody who's being sheltered And we were really making good progress. And just at the point when we could have begun to do something, that's when everybody was plucked out of Afghanistan and sent over to Iraq in preparation for that ridiculous. You know, it would be like if your foot itched, you'd scratch your ears. That was what going into Iraq was all about. So at the administration. At the same time, balked at giving the Afghanis the support it needed. As he often does, Krugman writes, Bush said the right things. The history of the conflict in Afghanistan has been one of initial success followed by long years of floundering and ultimate failure. We're not going to repeat that mistake. But then he proceeded to do just that, neglecting Afghanistan in ways that foreshadowed the future calamity in Iraq. During the first 18 months after the Taliban were driven from power, the U.S.-led coalition provided no peacekeeping troops outside the capital city. Economic aid in a destitute nation shattered by war was minimal in the crucial first year. Now remember, the day after 9/11, the administration already wanted tax cuts for the richest. In Afghanistan, where we really could have done something, they were stingy and mingy. When the new government was trying to build legitimacy, we were not helping them to do it. And the result was the floundering and failure that we see today. Paul Krugman asks this, how did it all go so wrong? The diversion of resources into a gratuitous war in Iraq is certainly a large part of the story. Although administration officials continue to insist that the invasion of Iraq somehow made sense as part of a broadly defined war on terror, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence has just released a report confirming that Saddam Hussein regarded al-Qaeda as a threat, not an ally. He even made attempts to capture Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. But Iraq doesn't explain it all. Even though the Bush administration was secretly planning another war in early 2002, it could have still spared some troops to provide security and allocated more money to help the Karzai government. As in the case of planning for post-war Iraq, however, Bush officials apparently refused even to consider the possibility that things would not go exactly the way they hoped. So here you have a faith-based military operation. They weren't even planning for any kind of contingency because they just didn't even think that they could possibly lose. It was just going to go their way, faith-based military operation. These days, most agonizing about the state of America's foreign policy is focused, understandably, on the new enemies we've made in Iraq. But let's not forget that the perpetrators of 9/11 are still at large, 5 years later, and that they have reestablished a large, safe haven somewhere. 349-1320, 866-620-6-1320. So I don't care whether the template is Afghanistan, whether the template is Iraq, or whether the template is Katrina. What do these three have in common? They have all been disasters at the hands of an administration that cares nothing about you and me. As Al Franken said today, and you may have heard him, the signature wound in the battle in Iraq, because there is armor, it, brain injuries, and this administration has cut the budget for that kind of injury from about $14 million to $7 million. Not even a tax cut that somebody of the magnitude of the Waltons would have received. So this is what this administration is all about. And they are just waiting. They have got all kinds of plans to take over in the November election, including going highly negative, including going very, they're doing opposition research, they're going negative, and they're going to go personal. They're going to step on the gas. And in case that doesn't do it, they're also restricting voting in a number of states. And in case that doesn't do it, I think you can count on them to do the thing that two 54-year-old women with $12 worth of tools they got at the hardware store and 4 minutes of their spare time did, and that is they were able to remove the voting seals, the seals of electronic voting machines, alter the tally, and replace the machine as though the seal were never broken. And you would never know that they did that, except that they did that. So this is an administration that knows it's on the ropes. and that is going to pull out every single stop, whether it's a fair one or an unfair one, whether it's legal or whether it's illegal. When they wiretap you, they have not caught one terrorist, as far as I'm aware. They haven't stopped one terrorist plot with all their surveillance and the decimation of our civil liberties. All they have done is to make us weaker than we were pre-9/11. 349-1320, 866, 626-1320. So, how are we different since 9/11? Are we? I'm Enid Goldstein, and you are listening to the Monday edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. We have a couple of crashes along the roadway there. Placer Hills Road eastbound I-80 is stopping traffic. A three-car crash eastbound Whitney at Watt. We have a hit-and-run at Vintage Park Drive and Elk Grove Florin Road. Another hit-and-run at Missouri Flat Road and Golden Center Drive. And a pedestrian hanging out on the roadway, it looks like, eastbound 50 just west of Bradshaw Road. I'm sure showing his patriotic side. That's what I'm guessing. Those tonight right around 69. Highs coming up tomorrow about 92, 93. We're at 89 and Eden Live continues on this special edition of 9/11 at AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel.
Taking the left lane all the way home with Eden Live on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel. The Morning Retort.
Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, is Showdown at Cache Creek 2. The 8 action-packed mixed martial arts match card features in the main event Mike Whitehead from Spike's Ultimate Fighter 2 against Zane Frazier from UFC 1 and 9. Plus special guest appearances by 3-time UFC champion Dan the Beast Severn and MMA legend Boz Rutten. Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, visit cachecreek.com for more details.
Hi, I'm Scott Thorington, morning co-host on AM 1320's Morning Retort. More young people are becoming infected with AIDS than ever before. But now you can be part of the solution. Help raise awareness and save lives by joining me and show up for the Sacramento Valley AIDS Run and Walk. Sunday, September 17th at the west steps of the state capitol. Registration begins at 7:30 and proceeds benefit HIV/AIDS nonprofit agencies in the region. You can make a difference. To find out more, go to 1320leftchannel.com.
Freedom cannot be forced into existence, nor can it be won through painful struggle.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Freedom cannot be bought or sold. It has nothing to do with one's social status. One's profession is of no consequence.
Sacramento's Left Channel.
In order for you to accept yourself as you are and live with your soul at peace, you must simply teach yourself to let it be. Only then will you discover freedom.
And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
Hi, this is Jackie Schultz.
And Nisa Davis Hayden.
From the Studio Theater in downtown Sacramento.
And we need your support.
We have a great show at the theater, and we want to make a special offer to all of you AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel listeners. Our show is the Tony-nominated musical Pump Boys and Dinettes. Come see the show that audience members are saying will melt your troubles away.
Welcome to Highway 57, somewhere between Frog Level and Smyrna. It's 1982, and on one side of the road is a gas station by four happy-go-lucky guys who provide service with a smile. Opposite, the Cup Sisters own the diner where fun is always on the menu.
The entire performance is filled with humor and song and transports the audience to a simpler, more relaxed time.
Each AM 1320 listener that mentions this ad gets $5 off their ticket. Pump Boys and Dinettes plays Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 2 through October 8th. Call the box office at 446-2668 or go to thestudiotheater.net.
We need your support.
New rule. No more whining about the French. At least they're standing up to the Bush administration, which is more than I can say for the Democrats. And by the way, it doesn't make me un-American to say I'd rather live in Paris than in places where cheese only comes in individually wrapped slices. New rule. Secretary Ridge, we know you're running this huge Orwellian organization. There's no need to rub our face in it. New rule. No gay fraternities. Apparently there are now dozens of them. Why bother? If you're gay, you already have a much better way of bonding with another man than the chug-a-lug. A dirty show this week.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Shaking up the Weasel Empire.
We'll make America where we want it to be. A literate country and a hopeful country.
It's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Stop us now!
On the Monday 9/11 edition of Enid Live, I'm yours until 7, 3 to 7 weekdays on AM 1320 Sacramento's left channel. You can join the conversation 349-1320 or 866-620-1320. Remember, we stream live 1320leftchannel.com, and you can email me, enid@kctc.com. In the next hour, if all goes well, we are going to be joined by Newsweek's Michael Isikoff and David Korn from The Nation magazine. He's, I believe, the Washington editor. And they have written a new book that has gotten a lot of publicity because it's broken a lot of new ground. It's called Hubris, the inside story of spin, scandal, and the selling of the Iraq war. I think selling is really apropos here, because the question that I'm asking all the way through is, how are we different post 9/11? Are we stronger? Are we less self-centered? Have we gotten wiser? Are we more manipulated? Are we more fearful? A lot of people are more anxious, and particularly people who live close to ground zero report being more anxious as a whole. So that all this fear has been used to manipulate us, but it has not been used to make us stronger, which is pretty immoral and pretty cheap, and we let them do it. We were happy to fall into the arms of fear, and these people pretended that they would protect us. But really, they have made the world safe only from high taxes for their richest friends. And if you sent your son and daughter into battle, and your son or daughter came back with the signature injury of this battle, which is a brain injury, this administration has cut the budget for that in half. It would be amount to pocket change for the tax, you know, a tax cut for some of the rich people that they have provided tax cuts for. And the rich people have gotten way richer in the arms of this administration. 349-1320, 866-620-1320. We are, meanwhile, more debt-ridden. We are asking our grandchildren to pay for this generations hence. We have weakened our country. Whatever it was, that this handful of hijackers, and these were hijackers on a shoestring, they brought us down emotionally. They may have brought down the Twin Towers, but they brought us down emotionally, and they did it for under $500,000. Can you believe that? I don't know, what does a page in the New York Times cost? You know, is it $100,000? I really don't know. Those of you in the advertising business, how much does it cost to buy a page in the New York Times? Maybe a $500,000 would have bought, you know, a week's worth of advertising in the New York Times, full page ads. Would that have brought America down? I don't think so. But they managed to do this thing on a shoestring. I think it was estimated at $400,000 or something at the time. And this administration saw that they could come in, they could make us frightened, and therefore we were more manipulatable, and then they could do whatever they wanted to do, which they had been wanting to do even before 9/11. And what they wanted to do was to do only, you know, to reshape the Middle East, go after Saddam Hussein. This has squandered our resources in every way. It has squandered our goodwill. It has squandered lives. And if you had a son and daughter over in Iraq, I imagine, and people who can't even come home, people who thought they were in the National Guard, but find themselves a victim of stop-loss orders. So it's okay to send other people. You know, this is an administration that was never in the military. I'm just furious every time I think about it. I'm furious that so many Americans were so easily manipulated, because the one thing that this administration is brilliant at, hands down, is that they're marketers. That's all they have. There isn't any substance behind what they're selling. They're just selling. And on Wednesday, we are going to have the authors on, one of whom is a reporter for the Dallas Morning News, has covered Karl Rove for decades. And he says Karl Rove admits to being an agnostic. So these people will say anything. And Karl Rove's stepfather was gay. But that doesn't matter. They're going to be the biggest gay bashers. They're going to be the biggest promoters of religious right, because this is their base. And they're going to sound like this is stuff they really care for and care about, and people are going to want to believe them. So it's like listening to an infomercial that sounds really convincing at 3 o'clock in the morning when you don't have all your faculties about you. But wait, there's more. 1995, you know, that bald spot will spray some flocking on the back of your head, which no one will notice is flocking that's sprayed on the back of your head to make you look like a 55 Chevy. But wait, there's more. You can buy that thigh cream for $19.95. You slather it on your thighs. You go to sleep, and in the morning, your thighs are 20 pounds lighter. But wait, there's more. Really? Oh, I'm going to get me that 1995. I'm going to send that right in. Oh, God. Well, that is what this administration has managed to do. It has lied. It has repeatedly lied. And there's not a lot of anger about it. And there's so much disengagement. It's like, okay, well, they lied. They keep lying. They're lying. They're going to lie some more, and I'm not even going to bother to vote. I think there's some of that going on. Well, they lied. They keep lying. I don't know. I don't read the newspaper. I got to earn a living. I just care about getting designer clothing. Oh, I just want to get those designer initials all over that handbag. I want to buy that. There is the Wall Street Journal over the weekend did something on some of these fancy status handbags. One of them sells for $35,000. I mean, that's what you buy that handbag for $35,000. You got no money to put anything into it. 349-1320, 866-626, 1320. But this administration pretended that it was strong on protecting you. Meanwhile, none of the ports are, the cargo is largely on screen coming into our ports. They wanted to outsource the ports to, remember that whole deal? They wanted to outsource it to, I forget now, it was, I want to say, I'll think of the country, but, you know, it was one of the Arab countries. It'll come to mind in a second. You go on a plane, they've made the world safe for chapstick. You go on a plane, you can't take your chapstick, you can't take your gels, you can't take any. You think that cargo goes, that cargo is largely unscreened. And I heard a spokesman from LL Airlines say that in their history, and they do the most thorough screening of anybody, they have never found bombs by machines. It's always been by human beings. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. So cargo goes largely unscreened in the planes you're on. I'm Enid Goldstein. You are listening to the 9/11 edition of Enid Live on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. Well, people are scurrying around there. Florin Road and Missouri Flat. We've got a three-car crash up on I-5 just south of Florin Road. We have a vehicle in the roadway, actually in the middle lane, stopping traffic. Now, we have a hit-and-run at Vintage Park Drive and Elk Grove Florin Road, a hit-and-run at Missouri Flat Road and Golden Center. That's in Placerville, but it's stopping traffic into Sac. Twin Cities Road just west of PlayStation. We have a three-car crash. Lows tonight, 69. Highs coming up around 92 or 93 tomorrow. We're at 89, and Enid Live continues on 9/11 at AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Boxcar Betty. Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day, and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
So hot today in New York City, that naked guy on the subway was screaming, "Who's crazy now?" Got him. Hot down in Washington, D.C., Dick Cheney replaced his pacemaker with an ice maker. In It's so hot, Christy Brinkley is now dating Ben and Jerry.
Whoa!
It's so hot today, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush told Al Roker to stop doing that. That's what he said. That's what President Bush said at the G8 summit. He was overheard using a dirty language at the G8 summit. And not only that, later he was ejected for headbutting.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Welcome to Los Angeles, where I believe the official sunscreen is now lead, isn't it, pretty much? Oh, my God, this heat. I was sweating like Naomi Campbell trying to hire a maid. It was so hot today. It was so hot in Hollywood today. Brad and Angelina adopted Ben and Jerry. Did you know that? It was so hot in Encino. Michael Jackson actually stopped at a young boy's lemonade stand and just bought the lemonade. You know the worst part about this heat wave across the country is Al Gore walking around going, I told you so. Actually, if Al Gore's movie on global warming is correct, as you know, the ice caps are shrinking. You all know about that. The glaciers are shrinking. The only thing not shrinking, Al Gore, apparently. Have you seen Al? Really, not shrinking. I tell you, the heat, it puts people in a bad mood. You know, in fact, coming into work today, people were swearing like President Bush near an open mic. It was unbelievable.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Entitled to it. Enid Live on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel.
On the Monday 9/11 edition of Enid Live, I am yours until 7, 3 to 7 weekdays on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel. We're talking about the question that will sort of wind its way through the broadcast today, and we have lots and lots of things to talk about. And in the next hour, I'll tell you in a second, if you're just joining us, who we're going to be joined by. It should be pretty lively. The question is 9/11. You can't escape it today. How are we better? Are we worse? How are we different in these 5 years since 9/11? And are you surprised by how we are different? And in the next hour, we are going to be joined by
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320LeftChannel.com.
Remembering those lost.
Edelmiro Abad.
Maria Rose Abad.
Andrew Anthony Abate.
And reaffirming resolve.
A presidential call tonight for political unity in the war on terror. I'm Mark Knoller at the White House.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Even the bright blue sky was a reminder of that clear day 5 years ago when suddenly it was no ordinary day and the sky filled with black smoke as horror unfolded. At the sites of the terrorist attacks, solemn, sad remembrances today. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick begins our coverage from New York.
Bells tolled at the moment the plane struck the Trade Center towers and again when those towers fell. After a moment of silence, the names of the victims were read by their spouses and partners.
I love you forever, Walter.
Musician Wynton Marsalis took the stage before Mayor Michael Bloomberg officially closed the ceremony.
I want to thank everyone for helping us commemorate this day, for giving a human face to the names engraved on our city's heart.
But even as he spoke, hundreds of victims' relatives continued to make their way down into the pit, carrying flowers and photos of their loved ones. Many lingered even after leaving their tributes. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, New York.
This is Barry Bagnato at the Pentagon. At 9:37 a.m., the moment American Airlines Flight 77 struck this building 5 years ago.
Please join me in observing a moment of silence.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld thinking back.
I remember working our way through that long, tragic day.
Looking ahead, both he and Vice President Cheney insisted that out of this terror tragedy comes resolve.
We have no intention of ignoring or appeasing history's latest gang of fanatics.
President Bush placed a wreath in front of a charred slab of limestone and then consoled relatives of the 184 victims with handshakes and hugs.
This is Jim McPherson in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It's said that time heals. If so, Betty Camara needs plenty more time.
Well, part of my mother is here. Part of her body's still on that field. And good Lord willing, that's where he wants her to be. That's where she is.
Having lost her mother on Flight 93, choking back tears, Camara told me she misses her mother as much as she did 5 years ago.
More on the 9/11 anniversary after this.
If you're taking a trip and wanted to go an extra 33,000 miles, would you be better off with a Michelin man driving or with a cabbie?
Where are you going?
Across the country, 11 times.
That'd be about $62,000.
Is that with the air conditioning on or without?
Without.
Well, the Michelin man can beat that hands down. Michelin Hydro-Edge tires outlast the leading competitor by up to 33,000 miles, so you get more tire for your money. To find a Michelin dealer nearest you, visit MichelinMan.com. Michelin, a better way forward.
At Romano's Macaroni Grill.
You know how I discover things you guys miss?
Exactly.
Like this sausage stuffed cannelloni with its layers of flavors. Never had it before, have you?
Well, it's brand new.
Italian sausage, homemade meat sauce, melted cheese.
Your pasta Milano, I discovered that.
Tender chicken, garlic cream sauce. I get it here all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a Mac Grill classic.
But I discovered it first. I'm a discoverer. Like Marco Polo.
Well, you're old enough.
From pasta Milano to new sausage stuffed cannelloni, discover the many flavors of Romano's Macaroni Grill.
President Bush, after attending memorials at all three attack sites, speaks to the nation 2 hours from now. For a preview, we go live to the White House and CBS News correspondent Mark Knoller.
Bill, it will be his 19th address to the nation, but only his fifth from the Oval Office. President Bush will use this speech to issue a new call for national unity in the war on terror. He will say we must put aside our differences and work together to say that we must meet the test that history has given us. He will call the war not just a clash of civilizations, but a struggle for civilization. Once again, he will caution that America faces a difficult road ahead and that the war on terror will not be over until Americans, or those he calls the extremists, emerge victorious. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Knoller, CBS News.
The Pentagon, it was a Pentagon official, was in the hot seat on Capitol Hill today. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss.
In a sometimes contentious hearing, Undersecretary of Defense Eric Edelman acknowledged but would not discuss a new intelligence report that the local government has collapsed in Iraq's Anbar province and the chances for securing the area are seen as dim. Democrat Dennis Kucinich angrily noted the report is in the Washington Post.
You'd read about it on the front page of a major newspaper, and then you're told, well, you can't talk about it because it's classified. What a bunch of baloney.
Edelman insisted Iraq will be able to take over its own security at some point, but would give no estimate of when that might be.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
My back was...
up the Weasel Empire.
We'll make America where we want it to be. A literate country and a hopeful country.
It's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Stop us
minutes after 4 o'clock. Welcome to Hour 2 of Enid Live. I am yours until 7 on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel. Remember, the calls here are toll-free, 916-349-1320 or 866-626-1320. We stream live, 1320leftchannel.com, and you can email me, enid@kctc.com. This is the Monday special edition, 9/11 edition of Enid Live. And joining me in this segment are two authors, two wonderful authors, Michael Isikoff of Newsweek magazine and David Korn. They have just written a new book called Hubris, the inside story of spin, scandal, and the selling of the Iraq War, perfect for a day like this. Michael Isikoff, thank you for joining us. Hello.
With you.
Great. And David Korn, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you, too.
Good. Now we know what you both sound like. The thing that we were looking for, the reviews of Hubris, and there were no reviews yet, but there was plenty of news that this book has made. So talk to me about that. How come no reviews?
Well, the book was scheduled to come out a month from now.
Late last week and just went out to book reviews and book editors at the end of the week. But we've already made a bit of a splash on several fronts. The book is primarily about the selling of the Iraq War, the marketing, how the Bush White House and the administration sold the Congress and the American public on the need to go to war with Iraq, and how it used what it was now unmistakably shaky and extremely flimsy intelligence to build a case that, whether wittingly or not, ended up being fraudulent. But as part of that, we have a great deal on the Valerie Plame Wilson leak case and the investigation by Patrick Fitzgerald.
Well, I want to talk about that because I have interviewed Joseph Wilson a couple of times. David Korn, why are you two working together? Why are you and Michael? Why didn't just one of you do this book?
Well, I think what happened was last fall,
when the Scooter Libby was indicted, and there was even talk of a Rove indictment, I was working on another book project, and a publisher approached me and asked if I wanted to do a book on the leak scandal, and there were other publishers who were approaching Michael, and we share a common agent. So she was fielding all these same calls, and Michael and I have known each other for years as friends, and we never worked together.
Here's the magic question. Are you still friends after writing a book together?
As of now, we're still friends.
Oh, this is good.
She suggested we get together on this, but as we started working on the project, it really moved away from being a book on the Lee case to being a book, as Mike discussed earlier, you know, a behind-the-scenes inside narrative of what was going on at the White House, the CIA, the State Department, the Pentagon, in the run-up to the war, all these intelligence battles that were going on behind the scenes, and really digging into that and putting some, I think, you know, flesh and blood onto sort of the bones
of
Senate reports that have come out.
I have to tell you, I occasionally have reviewed books for the San Francisco Chronicle, and just the book just arrived. But looking through it, it's got a beautiful narrative. It just reads beautifully. All right. So what don't we know?
Can I just finish the question you were asking before about the splash we've made with the book already?
Well, the New York Times, for example.
To read the whole thing, it has a great deal on the Valerie Payne leak case. That's sort of the last third of the book, and we've broke significant news already on that case. The big mystery about the Valerie Plame Wilson case from the get-go is who was the primary source who leaked to Robert Novak, who set the ball in motion. And there had been 3 years of speculation in Washington about the identity of the senior administration official who first put this name in motion, or at least led to it, to the publication of Valerie Plame Wilson's outing in Robert Novak's column, and we identified him in this book. It's Richard Armitage, the Deputy Secretary of State, which has come as a big surprise to a lot of people. He was not a name who anybody had expected, certainly at the beginning of this, because he was not a White House official. In fact, he was a member of a small moderate cell within the administration who had misgivings about the war, and yet he was the one who blurted this out to Bob Novak and sort of set the ball in motion. That said, there was also simultaneously effort by people inside the White House, specifically Karl Rove and Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney's chief of staff, to do the same thing, to use this information, her supposed role at the CIA in setting up the trip for her husband, in an effort to discredit Joe Wilson for coming forward and criticizing the administration's use of intelligence. And we have a lot of new information in the book about that as well.
Michael Isikoff, talk to me about that for a moment, because now they're trying to get, Scooter Libby faces charges here. Cheney is lawyered up on this one. Talk to me, that now that Richard Armitage has been outed, what are the implications for Dick Cheney and for Scooter Libby and for Karl Rove? There is a civil suit, and the Plames are suing Karl Rove, I think, and Cheney civilly on this matter.
They are, and I don't think that the information relating to Armitage is going to be especially helpful to the Wilsons in their civil suit, but it shouldn't affect the criminal case that Patrick Fitzgerald has brought, because he has charged Scooter Libby not with the original leak, but with the with lying, with perjury before the grand jury, with lying to the FBI, and with obstruction of justice, and for essentially not being forthcoming about his own efforts to provide information about Valerie Plame Wilson to members of the news media. And those charges are unaffected by the information relating to Richard Armitage.
When we begin the book, there is a little set piece in the beginning where Bush is told about a question that Helen Thomas asks in a press conference. David Corin, you want to take us through that?
Yeah, this is the opening scene in the book. It's May 2002, and we're at the White House, and the president is hitting tennis balls, taking a break, and watching his dog scamper across the White House lawn, retrieving them. And he's with two press aides, Ari Fleischer and a press aide named Adam Levine. And he says, so what happened at the daily press briefing today that Ari Fleischer had given? And Ari Fleischer said, well, Helen Thomas was giving me a hard time about Iraq. even though it was nearly a year before the invasion, there was already, you know, talk in the air of the White House moving towards military confrontation with Iraq. And Helen Thomas was raising questions about that. Well, as Fleischer tells us to the president, Bush becomes very steely, and he starts cursing a blue streak, and he says, you tell her I'm going to kick Saddam Hussein's mother, well, freaking backside. He actually was much more explicit. He didn't have to worry about the FCC. Across the, a lot of good reasons for anybody to hate Saddam Hussein. He was, you know, he was a broody, he was genocidal years earlier. He was a foe of American policy. But it's this sort of visceralness of Bush's reaction, which I doubt he, you know, had when talking about the dictators of China or Burma or anywhere else, that seemed to, you know, be an animating factor, not necessarily the only factor, but an animating factor in what would come in the coming year as Bush and his advisors tried to sell the American public on the idea of going to war with Iraq.
What was the point of going to war with Iraq? It's sort of like if you get a footache, you're going to go to the ear doctor. Why in your view, did he, other than it was in the works in advance, was it to settle an old score for his father? Was it to the neocon view of reshaping the region? Why do you think this happened using 9/11 as the cover? Michael.
Well, look, you know, this is a complex question that we sort through some of the reasons. There had been a group of individuals, academics, former Bush administration officials in the first Bush administration, conservatives who were critical of Bill Clinton's foreign policy, the general sort of neoconservative group that became, that all got senior positions, many of them got senior positions in this administration, and they were committed to this course of action years before there was any September 11th. In many cases, as we reveal in this book, they were heavily influenced by the theories of a rather eccentric academic by the name of Lori Milroy, who was propounding in writings and in books that Saddam was behind, that was the epicenter of world terrorism, and was even behind things like the Oklahoma City bombing. These are theories that had been thoroughly rejected by the CIA and the FBI, but they were actually bought into in a big way by such figures as Paul Wolfowitz, who was the Deputy Secretary of Defense in this administration, Richard Perle, who was the chairman of the Defense Policy Board, Doug Feith, who was the Undersecretary of Defense, and these eccentric theories from which had been discredited in the eyes of the FBI, the CIA, and any most sensible people were being aggressively pushed by this small cabal, if you will, of neoconservatives who were using this to forward a case that they had been trying to make for years before September 11th.
How is it that Bush, who is not known as an intellectual, was manipulated by this group of people? Did this have to do with his own feelings about his father, about Saddam, you know, all the ways that people psychoanalyze Bush, have to do about trying to finish the work that his father didn't finish in Desert Storm? How is it that he was manipulatable on the issue of Iraq? Were you able to determine any of that?
But Enid, I don't think it's a matter of manipulation. I think back to high school mathematics with vectors, you know, those little lines on the graphs with arrows pointing in a given direction.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were several different vectors all working at once. You know, you mentioned the neoconservative agenda to confronting Saddam Hussein that was present even before 9/11. Michael described Chapter 4, which I have to say, I mean, if we tell people this, they literally can't believe that a fellow who's known to be as smart as Paul Wolfowitz would fall for basically, you know, conspiracy theories that were very elaborate without any proof behind them. But there was that vector going on, and with Bush, you know, you can psychoanalyze it. Was it because of the assassination attempt on his father's life that he talked about from 1993, that Iraq was supposedly behind? We have new information in the book about that that makes it seem much more murkier than previous accounts. Was it, you know, that he wanted to do something that his dad didn't do? I think, you know, this is more guesswork than anything else,
And historians, as we know in the book, will be arguing this point for years to come, that there was a real proactive need on the part of the president to be seen as protecting America and finding, you know, targets. Al-Qaeda is in 60.
Yeah, but Afghanistan was a perfect, you know, the point that Paul Krugman makes in his column today in the Times, is that the Clinton administration did not have a clear shot at Osama bin Laden, but the Bush administration did, and they did at Tora Bora. But they moved on.
Right. Well, they that's right. And that's,
I mean, so your thought that there was a place to put the anger, the hostility, the, you know, how to make America safe, could have resided in Afghanistan rather than in Iraq.
Well, I think there were several layers of things happening at once. Right after 9/11 happened, there were people at the American Enterprise Institute calling for attacking Saddam Hussein, and that was reflected in meetings at Camp David where Paul Wolfowitz advocated this. And even before 9/11, when, you know, Richard Clark talked about at the first deputies meeting about the terrorism agenda of the new Bush administration, he talked about Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and Paul Wolfowitz said, no, forget about him. Saddam Hussein is the problem here. So there was, you know, there were a lot of things in motion all at once. And I think, you know, I think all of us operate on different, you know, different psychological levels and different things are pushing us at different times. But I mean,
let's also not forget the role of Vice President Dick Cheney, who we write about extensively in the book. And, you know, simultaneous with the president and his visceral reaction to Saddam Hussein, Vice President Cheney bought into the theories of Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl about Saddam being behind all these terrorist acts that we now know he had nothing to do with. And the vice president was absolutely determined to find a connection between Saddam and 9/11. He pushed it relentlessly, particularly in the form of the Mohammed Atta in Prague allegation, which was, as we point out, by the spring of 2002, pretty much rejected by the CIA and the FBI. Yet Cheney and his chief of staff, Scooter Libby, were absolutely convinced it was there. They didn't want to hear it when they were told this. The evidence didn't support this allegation, and as we document in the book, continued to try to get it into into administration statements. They lobbied Secretary of State Powell to have it in the Powell speech to the United Nations. Powell wouldn't use it. Almost everything else he used turned out to be wrong as well, but he thought he was setting high standards when he rejected the book by Cheney.
And his recanting now really has such a false note about it. I think he squandered the goodwill that he had. The amazing thing to me is that there was some polling done recently, I think a Harris poll, that tells us that half the American people now believe that there was a link between Al-Qaeda and 9/11, up from 30-some percent just a few years ago. Are you amazed by that?
I'm pretty amazed by it because what it is the sort of post-war blending of terrorism and Iraq with information, you know, and it's sort of blurred into what was the situation before the war. There's no question that since the invasion of Iraq, Iraq has become a magnet for world terrorism. And one of the things we document pretty substantially in the book is all this was predicted before the war.
Oh, it was predicted.
Post-invasion planning reports that warned that not only would Iraq be riven with sectarian strife, but that by April of 2003, within weeks of the U.S. invasion, there were U.S. Army war planners who were saying that Iraq was going to become a magnet for jihadis all around the world.
People were saying that way in advance of the invasion. There was a writer for The New Yorker that I had on, I want to say Jane Weaver, but I think I've got that wrong, who'd written widely about Pakistan. She said it. A lot of people said it. In doing this book, Michael Isikoff and David Corn, the book is Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. What did you find out that really surprised you? Michael, go ahead.
Well, I think that probably what surprised me most was the sort of was just how much President George Bush drove this process. David described the scene that which we opened the book
in which the president curses a blue streak when the name of Saddam comes up in the spring of 2002 and vows to kick his derriere all across the Mideast. This is months before he's given the authority to do so by Congress. But there are other instances. We describe a meeting with congressional leaders in which the president, when the subject of Saddam comes up, the president takes his middle finger and thrusts it within inches of Tom Daschle's face to illustrate what he believes to be Saddam's attitude towards the United States, and says, that's why we're going to get him. There was a gut, visceral feeling on the part of George Bush that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, which in fact he was. Let's not.
Yeah, but he's not the only bad guy in the universe.
I think what's probably going to be disturbing to some people is that very complex and consequential American foreign policy decisions were being made on the basis of George Bush's gut, rather than a rather sustained
and a gut and a,
at what the right. intelligence shows.
And a gut on a guy who was a flop and a drunk until he was in his 40s. It's an amazing... David, if I were to ask you, what was the thing that surprised you most in doing this book, what would you say?
That's a very good question. I think we both were surprised by the amount of new material and revelations we were able to dig out in a year's worth of reporting. But there's one scene that speaks to me that, sure, I'm surprised by it. I'm not sure how the public's going to react to it either. But the book also covers, the years after the invasion and how the administration had to maintain its sales pitch to cover for what it had done before the war. And in late July of 2003, David Kaye, who has been selected, by the CIA to search for WMDs in Iraq, and who before the war believed there were WMDs there and actually said so repeatedly on television shows. At the end of July, he's been there now about 6-7 weeks, and he comes back to Washington, and he's brought in to brief the president on what his search for the causes belli has so far turned up. And he goes in the Oval Office, and there's the president, the vice president, the national security advisor, Condi Rice, Paul Wolfowitz is there, Scooter Libby's there, I think Donald Rumsfeld's there too, and he basically tells them there are no weapons of mass destruction. He hasn't found them, he doesn't really expect to find them. What he thinks might have been present before the war was a production surge capability, meaning that if Saddam Hussein snapped his fingers, then his scientists could quickly cook up some biological or chemical weapons. That later, after some more work, Kay discovered that was not the case, but that was his optimistic assumption at the time. So anyway, so he tells the president that there are no weapons of mass destruction, and then he waits. And the president has virtually no questions for him. Now, where are they? What happened to them? Are you sure you looked everywhere? Nothing. And then he looks around the room. He expects that maybe Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld or Wolfowitz will jump in and take over the questioning. And nobody says much of anything. And the president says, well, what can I give you? And Kay says, well, patience. I just need more time. And he goes, okay, I have a world of patience. And that was the end of the meeting. Kay walked out of that meeting completely flabbergasted and told us, quoted in the book, that never in his life as a senior government official has he ever met anybody as uninquisitive as Bush was at that meeting. And he was just absolutely stunned by that. I think what it means, people can interpret for themselves.
Well, that also happened with Katrina. He was reportedly briefed about Katrina in advance, and he had no questions. Do you recall that?
That's true, and that's probably a reflection, I suppose, of a management style of he looks at the big picture and
oh, Michael, you are so generous. A management style. I mean, this is a man whose IQ isn't even, is hovering below the radar. If you have no questions for a briefing at Katrina, when you have no questions when somebody comes in and tells you, refutes the conventional wisdom of your group of people, it's your mind, I guess, is made up, or you're utterly incurious.
Well, or a combination of both.
Or an IQ possibly hovering at room temperature, which I know is not true of him. He's not stupid, but there's something very odd there. My guests are Michael Isikoff and David Corn. Their new book, Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. I'm Enid Goldstein. You are listening to the Monday 9/11 edition of Enid Live on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel. Time now to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Well, what an amazing day, and traffic is pretty amazing as well. I can't believe it, especially on a Monday afternoon. We do have, though, a traffic hazard, a vehicle on the right-hand side of the road at 99 southbound by Fruit Ridge Road. Coming on northbound, Cap City Freeway by Cal Expo, we have a three-car crash there in Madison Avenue and I-80, a two-car crash. Lows tonight right around 69. Highs coming up 92, 93 tomorrow. We're at 89. And back with more Enid Live as we continue our 9/11 special edition at AM 1320. Sacramento's Left Channel.
Live and local. It's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
A new rule. If you really want freedom, don't cheapen the word by using it to describe potatoes. Yeah. Ohio Representative Bob Ney found time in what must be a hectic schedule to rename French fries Freedom Fries, leading the French to rename American cheese Bob Ney. New rule. If you are the president, you have to have stuff on your desk. You just do. It makes us feel better. It's just new rule. Let Tony Blair do the talking. No, I say this sympathetically to Mr. President. You don't need to be doing the speechifying. You're like the Clint Eastwood character in a Western, the tough guy who doesn't say much. Tony Blair, he's the gay English character actor. Let him come in and lay the pipe. Plus, he's British. It just sounds smarter.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule. Get the Ashton Kutcher Demi Moore breakup over now. Let's just pretend we've already printed those issues of Us Weekly and People read them and thrown them away. And while we're at it, let's also pretend we've already heard Joe Lieberman drop out. New rule. In an all-volunteer army, there can be no such thing as a conscientious objector. Marine Stephen Funk says he shouldn't have to go to Iraq because he just joined the Marines to, quote, learn new things and meet new people. That's like joining the Beach Boys and then announcing you're not going to play that stupid surf music. We need Saddam Hussein's head. Stop talking about his DNA. Nobody made a movie called Bring Me the DNA of Alfredo Garcia. Traumatized Iraqis need to see the head on a pole in the center of Baghdad, or as it's now called, the Galleria at Halliburton Square.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. The campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy. See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Shaking up the Weasel Empire.
We'll make America where we want it to be. A literate country and a hopeful country.
It's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Stop us
now! Oh, my name, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up there, the laws to abide. that the land that I live in has God on its side.
4:34 on the Monday 9/11 edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 7, 3 to 7 weekdays on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. You can email me, enid@kctc.com. My guests, Michael Isikoff of Newsweek magazine, David Korn of The Nation, their new book, Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. When we last left each other, Michael and David, I was asking you the most surprising things that you encountered in doing the book, and I want to talk about how the war was spun. This is a book, for those of you just joining us, that has not yet been reviewed, is probably going to be reviewed because the review copies are going have gone out late last week, I guess. But it has broken a lot of news. When you Google it, you know, it takes you to the New York Times. It takes you to a lot of places where you've revealed a lot of new reporting. What, besides Richard Armitage, what the president said about Helen Thomas and revealed his visceral response to Saddam Hussein. Tell us some more about the new information that you have uncovered, David Korn.
Well, here's something that I was just thinking about the other day, because Dick Cheney was then on Meet the Press and has been basically defending the case they made for war, and that they, you know, used the best intelligence they had. You can't really blame them. But people might believe that he, before the war, made a strong case that Iraq was reconstituting its nuclear weapons, or its nuclear weapons program, that is. And the only really solid piece of evidence that they had for that was that they had found that Iraq had been procuring high-strength aluminum tubes that might have been useful in a nuclear centrifuge to make enriched uranium that would be used for a nuclear weapons program. Now, there was only one CIA analyst who was really driving this, who believed that the tubes were for that purpose. Every top specialist the U.S. government had, mainly centrifuge experts in the Department of Energy, some of whom we spoke to, believed that these tubes were not suitable for a centrifuge and, in fact, were being used for rocket launchers. And there was a very hotly contested dispute amongst all these folks over whether these tubes were evidence. Now, Cheney cited these, as did Condoleezza Rice and others, several times at key moments in the run-up to the war. We spoke to some of these scientists for the DOE, and they told us that they could see what was going on, that this one analyst at the CIA, who didn't have the technical expertise that they did, was driving the process, and that Vice President and others were making this case publicly, and they felt they couldn't speak out, that they would lose their jobs. They were, you know, they were told, in fact, not to talk to the media about this, not to say anything. So here's a case when, you know, perhaps the most important piece of evidence and the most important component of the WMD case is hotly disputed. The White House doesn't care to review this debate, and the people who know the truth, who could say something and contribute to the national discourse on this, are told to shut up, otherwise you will lose your job. And that just, you know, I think in some ways encapsulates so much that went wrong with the selling of the war.
Well, it happened in a lot of ways. It happened with the actuary who threatened to reveal to Congress, or who may have was going to reveal to Congress what the actual cost of the Medicare drug prescription benefit was also threatened with the loss of his job.
And well, you're only talking about a couple $100 billion here. Here we're talking about war.
It's their MO. I guess the point I was trying to make is that it is their MO that they and they had a complicit. They had a press corps that was acting as cheerleaders and stenographers, also afraid of losing their jobs. They're also afraid of raising such objections that they might be pulled off of the beat because they would be denied access. So that also operating.
I don't know about afraid of losing their jobs, but there's no question, and I think we amply document this in our book, the role that news organizations and some reporters played in feeding the atmosphere that led to war by reporting without question, without any qualification, the allegations that were being made by senior U.S. officials that turned out to be utterly false. And the New York Times, the august New York Times, the nation's premier newspaper, was used by this White House
in these crucial days in the run-up to the war in Iraq on a number of occasions, stories that turned out to be false were cited by Vice President Cheney and others to as the underminnings for some of the most dramatic charges about Iraq.
Well, that was Judith Miller.
Well,
in
Judith
part.
Miller, and we document how one Judith Miller story, which was based on a defector provided by the Iraqi National Congress, who had flunked the CIA polygraph test, who was viewed as a fabricator by the U.S. intelligence.
Was that curveball, Michael?
That was not curveball, actually.
Oh, they had you. You mean they were manufacturing? They were manufacturing these unreliable. go ahead.
They were certainly feeding these unreliable sources to journalists like Judy Miller, who printed them. They ended up in front page stories in the New York Times that Iraq was a veritable storehouse of WMDs. Those stories are then used by the White House, and we show how a particularly important White House white paper on Iraq and a decade of defiance and deception on WMD was used by the White House citing these false New York Times stories.
What was a
feedback loop where you had the INC supplying, fabricating defects to the New York Times, which then prints them, which then gives the White House the ammunition.
It reminds me of those forged documents Joseph Wilson were thought to be crude documents. When Joseph Wilson was dispatched to Niger. But what was the role of, and I don't know how to pronounce her name, Laurie Milroy. Okay, what was her role in this whole? What was her role here in the selling, the spinning of this war?
Well, the interesting thing is that for years, she, I think we reveal in the book, she started off actually as an apologist for Saddam in the late 1980s when Saddam was using chemical weapons and abusing human rights. She was writing pieces saying that the U.S. should work with him, and she then engaged in backdoor, behind the scene diplomacy, trying to broker some sort of informal peace deal between Iraq and Israel, and it didn't come to pass. And then Iraq invaded Kuwait, and she felt personally betrayed. And then she developed this theory, I think being somewhat motivated by her personal feeling of betrayal, that Saddam Hussein was literally the force behind all acts of terrorism in the world. And she managed to, get people like Richard Pearl, we mentioned earlier, Paul Wolfowitz, Jim Woolsey, who was a former CIA director, to sign on to this and to really believe that the problems of terrorism in the world were not from groups like Al-Qaeda. And if Al-Qaeda did anything, it was only because the hidden hand of Saddam Hussein was behind them. And they took this right into the White House. They were emphasizing and working on, focusing on Iraq as the terrorism threat before 9/11. And then once 9/11 hit, the light bulb went off for them. See, we finally have our proof. And it's a little bit of a bizarro planet way of going about doing things here. And this is one part of the book that, that you asked what was surprising. I think the extent of her influence and the ability, or the extent to which people like Paul Wolfowitz supported her and once were in government told others that this is what he believed and tried to get others to buy on and find evidence of this, surprised me.
This is like Mo Curley and Larry running foreign policy. Michael, there was a piece in Vanity Fair, I think in, a month or two ago, on those forgeries, the crude forgeries, indicating that Iraq was supposedly trying to buy enriched uranium in Niger. And it was a very convoluted story, whether it was meant to be it was meant to be a crude forgery. You were supposed to be distracted by it. It was supposed to be some form of tradecraft. What did you find out about those documents?
Well, we don't buy into the vast conspiracy theory that this was manufactured for the purpose of influencing the U.S. government. The FBI did reach a tentative conclusion that this was most likely a con job. It could rule out the possibility that some elements of Italian intelligence may have been involved, and we spell that out and identify the likely officials who might have been involved if in fact there was such involvement. But what we do show is that that these documents were pretty transparently fraudulent to anybody who took the time to look at them once they were available to be inspected. And in fact, there were U.S. intelligence analysts who spotted the forgery, who could tell. There was a telltale clue that made it clear that these documents were fraudulent. It involves a companion document that was just utterly preposterous about a supposed rogue alliance between Iran and Iraq and other rogue states. Nothing. Anybody who knew anything about the Middle East knew that this was completely implausible. And therefore, if the companion document was fraudulent, it certainly would have indicated that the underlying Niger uranium documents were fraudulent. And in fact, there was emails written by a very shrewd U.S. State Department intelligence analyst. We identify him in the book, who used the word hoax, forgery, you know, ridiculous, in emails that were distributed to the U.S. intelligence community before President Bush uttered his famous 16 words suggesting that Iraq had been recently caught trying to buy uranium from Africa based on these forged documents. So, you know, once again, the intelligence was there to show that the claims being made by the administration were fraudulent or very possibly fraudulent, and yet the White House, hell-bent on making its case, used them anyway.
I have to tell you that I have a substantial conservative, oddly enough, even though we're an Air America radio station, I have a substantial conservative listenership who calls in to say that there were weapons of mass destruction, but they were moved to some other place. And it doesn't matter how many details you spell out in your new book, and if you're just joining us, my guests are Michael Isikoff of Newsweek magazine and David Corn of The Nation. The new book is Hubris, the Inside Story of Spin Scandal and the Selling of the Iraq War. People are still going to believe it. 25% of the population still believes that Elvis lives. So I rest my case. But I know you have to go, but I want to ask you before you do, in the spinning of this war, how, you know, we all know that it has been spun, and you have uncovered new details in how the war has been spun. What do you see happening from this point on? Bill Clinton is quoted as saying they trotted out the fear of this old dog, and it's got mange on it three times. Is the spinning going to? I mean, people, the ratings, the polls tell us that we aren't as fooled anymore. But I still wonder what's going to happen in the midterm elections. What are your thoughts looking into the tea leaves? Michael Isikoff.
I have no idea. I mean, I think that this is going to be a very hotly contested election. I think that the president's poll ratings are indicate this is not going to be a good year for Republicans. All the polls indicate that, but I've been covering elections for a long time, and it's very hard to know, in the closing months how this thing is going to play out. But I don't think there's any way of escaping the fact that this issue, the Iraq war, and the credibility of the administration is going to be central in the campaign.
David Corn, looking into the tea leaves, what would you see?
Yeah, I'm not making any predictions either, and I certainly hope that the credibility of the administration is a central issue. I mean, I still look at what Vice President Cheney said yesterday on Meet the Press. He got out there and he said that the Dofer report, this report submitted by Charles Dofer, who took over the Iraq Survey Group after David Kaye, he said that this report showed that Saddam Hussein had the capability to make weapons of mass destruction. Well, the Dofer report says that the capability was, quote, essentially destroyed in 1991, meaning that Saddam Hussein didn't have the capability. So it was exactly the opposite of what Cheney, told the public. Now, the question is, if you keep saying this stuff over and over again, is Bill Clinton right does it wear off eventually, and people sort of look at the results in Iraq and tend not to believe what you say? Or if you say it loudly enough, then you do what the president's done the last couple of days, last week, with these high-profile speeches, does it, you know, get them just barely over the finish line ahead of the Democrats? This will be a very interesting, you know, test of what politics works and what which type of politics don't work.
Michael Isikoff and David Korn, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today. The book, Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin Scandal and the Selling of the Iraq War. The book is a fascinating book, and thank you both.
Thank you.
I'm Enid Goldstein, and you are listening to the Monday edition of Enid Live on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel. Time now to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. Well, our lows tonight, 68, 69. Nice and breezy. It has been for the last couple of nights, but feeling good. 91, 92. We are at 89 here in the River City. Now, our traffic, southbound 99, Fruit Ridge Road, Mack Road, and Elk Grove Boulevard. We have crashes there. Coming on northbound 99 and on to Cap City Freeway, up to Arden Way. Our traffic is about 5, maybe 10 miles an hour, but that's about it. I-80 going westbound, right next to Madison Avenue. We have a three-car crash there. Back with Enid Live continues at AM 1320. I'm Lisa West for traffic and weather from the left.
If loving Enid is wrong, we don't want to be right. AM 1320.
Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, is Showdown at Cache Creek 2. The 8 action-packed mixed martial arts match card features in the main event Mike Whitehead from Spike's Ultimate Fighter 2 against Zane Frazier from UFC 1 and 9. Plus special guest appearances by 3-time UFC champion Dan the Beast Severn and MMA legend Boz Rutten. Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, visit cachecreek.com for more details.
You deserve. Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Oh.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, it's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Over and bought into it. A third of us don't know, maybe today changes things, but a third of us did not know until today what year, 30% of Americans did not know what year 9/11 occurred in. 30% of Americans, 25% of Americans still think that Elvis lives. 50% of Americans believe that there's a connection between Iraq and 9/11. So when you have an administration that threatens people with their jobs, and you know, I have to say, this isn't the first time that people have been threatened with their jobs for exposing the truth, but that so many people rolled over and caved. Says something about people being afraid to lose a job, that these are more perilous times, maybe. Maybe it speaks to people's courage levels. And then they were able to manipulate the press. And how the administration was able to do that was that it would say anything it wanted, and it knew that reporters would cut it down the middle. Well, on the one hand, the president said this, but on the other hand, people who challenged the president said that. And they never give you what the truth is. On the one hand, the president says these aluminum tubes are being used to create weapons of mass destruction. On the other hand, someone says that's not the case. So you think, oh, well, maybe it's the case. I mean, I don't know. And then if you're looking, as many people were, to the New York Times or papers of record for their imprimatur on the war, the New York Times was heavily manipulated. And pretty much it gave its imprimatur to go to war on the eve of war. And Judy Miller was part of that. And if reporters asked tough questions, here's what would happen. They'd be shut out. They'd be denied access. And they wouldn't be able to do their jobs. So their editors might put somebody else, would appoint somebody else to the beat who would have access. And maybe what the impression you got is that if you went along, you what is it, go along to get along, get along to go along? Is that the phrase? So, and then reporters were embeds. Remember that? They were embedded within units. As we were marching off to war, which was the greatest public relations program the Pentagon could concoct, next to paying, you know, and then they got into overt propaganda where they were paying reporters. Oh, we didn't know it, and putting out video news releases for this or that. We didn't know it. People who were supposed to be pundits like Armstrong Williams, he got paid like $250,000 to mouth the administration line. So in every way, these people knew that they could shape the discussion. And Dick Cheney is still so arrogant that he goes on the air and says things that are completely untrue. Tim Russert did an interview on Sunday. I didn't see it. I've only seen the transcript of it, but maybe you saw it, in which he holds, kind of, sort of holds Dick Cheney's feet to the fire. And it doesn't matter. They don't care. They are so arrogant that they can assert anything. And we are so lacking in outrage. And the media beginning to come alive, but not completely off life support yet, so that they still are, you know, so I'm not trusting the polls, even though the polls are saying the Democrats have a really good shot at it. This is a group of people who are trying to restrict voting in a lot of states, the equivalent of the imposition of the poll tax. These are people who I would not hesitate to manipulate the tallies wherever they could. And using e-voting, it's not hard to do it, as blackboxvoting.org proved with two 54-year-old women. Menno's Left Channel. Two more hours coming up right here, right now.
To AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. On this fifth anniversary of the terrorist attacks, President Bush addresses the nation an hour from now. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller joins us live from the White House.
Bill, though spokesman Tony Snow has been saying for days that tonight's speech is not political, President Bush is using it to sound a call for national unity in the war on terror. Excerpts released in advance show Mr. Bush will say that winning the war requires the determined efforts of a unified nation. He will say, we must put aside our differences and work together. He'll acknowledge that every American wishes the war were over, himself among them, but it won't be over, he will say, until we or the extremists win. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Noller, CBS News.
It's been a day of memorials and painful memories. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick was at Ground Zero.
The ceremony began with drums and bagpipes. Bells sounded at the moment the planes hit the World Trade Center towers, and again at the time they collapsed, and the names of the victims were read.
Gordon M. Ameth. Jr.
Hundreds of victims' relatives then descended a long ramp into the pit where the towers once stood, carrying flowers and photos, and lingering long after the ceremony was over. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, New York.
The president, after breakfast with New York firefighters, traveled to Shanksville, Pennsylvania. There, a children's choir sang at a ceremony in the field where United Flight 93 crashed on 9/11. Still later, a wreath laying at the Pentagon. Mr. Bush was seen wiping tears as he spoke with relatives of the people killed there. Experts have long suspected that air travel plays a role in spreading flu around the world. Now they have confirmation. At Children's Hospital of Boston, epidemiologist John Brownstein studied the winter of 2001-2002 when air travel dropped dramatically after the terrorist attacks.
Flu ended up spreading across the country like it did any other year, but it just took much longer.
Brownstein says flight restrictions, along with school closings and other measures, might help control a flu pandemic. Last month, a study by the Massachusetts Health Department found that nicotine levels in cigarettes had increased by 10% over 6 years. Today, one tobacco company, Philip Morris, responded saying the data show nicotine levels fluctuate up and down. Philip Morris makes Marlboro cigarettes. Asked if the company adds nicotine, a spokesman said, no comment. The Palestinians' political stalemate may have been broken. President Mahmoud Abbas has struck a power-sharing deal with Hamas, which could lead to the restoration of international aid and contacts with Israel. But Hamas still refuses to renounce violence or to recognize Israel's right to exist. The Dow up 4 points today. The Nasdaq gained 7. This is CBS News.
If you're taking a trip and wanted to go an extra 33,000 miles, would you be better off with a Michelin man driving or with a cabbie?
Where are you going?
Across the country, 11 times.
That'd be about $62,000.
Is that with the air conditioning on or without?
Without.
Well, the Michelin man can beat that hands down. Michelin Hydro-Edge tires outlast the leading competitor by up to 33,000 miles. So you get more tire for your money. To find a Michelin dealer nearest you, visit MichelinMan.com. Michelin, a better way forward.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
A Harvard study finds a huge difference in Americans' lifespans, and a lot of it has to do with genes and geography.
Asian American women in Bergen County, New Jersey, live the longest of all Americans, typically 91 years. Yujin Choi, who lives there, says she knows why.
It depends on what kind of food you eat, because you have to do exercise.
The report's author, Harvard's Dr. Christopher Murray, says health is key, but to reduce the 30-year disparity in life expectancy among Americans in different areas, health care has to be available and utilized.
You really need a targeted effort to make sure things that work,
get to people who need them.
The shortest lifespan, American Indian men living in South Dakota, 58 years. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
How religious are we? A Baptist University survey finds only about 10% of Americans have no affiliation with a faith of some kind. Earlier studies suggested the number was larger, and many who have no ties to a congregation say they still believe in God or a higher power. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
If you're are you struggling?
New rule. Skip the truck. President Bush is down on the ranch, and we all know what that means. Lots of pictures of him in that pickup truck, as if he's going into town to pick up a bale of hay. Okay, we get it. You're a rancher. You're clearing brush. You're a Washington outsider. You're a huge country fan. Unfortunately, that country is Saudi Arabia. New rule. When somebody dies, we shouldn't cut off their head and drill holes into it. Ted Williams belongs in the hall, not the fridge. Cryogenics is one of those technologies that just doesn't work, like the missile defense shield and hair transplants. New rule. It's just a donut. What is up with the Krispy Kreme phenomenon? It's a glob of deep fried dough, not Super Bowl tickets. Aren't we Americans fat enough without pretending that donuts are hip?
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule. You don't get to do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready, new rule number one. Enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's her opinion, and you're entitled to it. Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
After 5 o'clock, welcome to the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 7 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. You can join the conversation, it's always toll free, 349-1320 or 866-620-61320. Remember that we stream live, 1320leftchannel.com. And you can email me, Enid at kctc.com. And your homework assignment, even on 9/11, which 30% of Americans don't know what year it occurred in, your homework assignment is to tell 3 to 5 people every day that we are here. And there'll be some advertising that will begin very shortly. So things are beginning to take off around here, but only with your help. And you can't get overconfident, just like the Democrats can't get overconfident about the midterm elections, because who knows what's going to happen. If you're just joining me, you have missed Michael Isikoff from Newsweek magazine and David Korn from The Nation and a new book, Hubris. Tomorrow we're going to be joined by Francine Prose, whose book is going to be on the New York Times bestseller list. Let me just give you a quick rundown of who our guests are this week. She has written Reading Like a Writer, a guide for people who love books and for those who want to write them. Wednesday, Wayne Slater and James Moore. Wayne Slater is a longtime reporter for the Dallas Morning News, has covered Karl Rove for a long time, and the two of them have written a book about Karl Rove called Architect, Karl Rove and the Master Plan for Absolute Power. Thursday, Nora Ephron will join us. Her new book is called I Feel Bad About My Neck and Other Thoughts on Being a Woman. She has written the screenplay for Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle. She directed Silkwood. She's done a lot of different, she wrote Heartburn, and so on. And Edward Jones on Monday will be joining us. He's won a Pulitzer Prize and is the National Book Award winning author of All Aunt Hager's Children. So these are just some of the guests coming up. I guess I'm asking the question today, in the wake of 9/11, how are we different as a country? Are we better? Are we worse? This is an administration that has used fear to manipulate us, and I don't think that ever makes you stronger. It just makes you more manipulatable. 349-1320-866-626-1320. Oliver in Sacramento. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Oliver.
I think, from my experience, after 5 years, that with all the manipulating and the fear-mongering, that there's also been this proliferation of hatred as well.
You know, you might be right about that. You might really be right about that.
It's just created this whole new race bias that has just infected every...
Well, certainly partisan. Everything is partisan insofar as politics is concerned. It's gotten more partisan. But go ahead.
Oh, well, my family. I mean, I come from a very Republican family, unfortunately. Nobody listens to me. But
speak up, Oliver. We're having a hard time hearing you. Talk right into the phone.
Okay. Sorry. In many cases, they speak very, very biased now, which never happened prior to 9/11 and all the events that followed, against those of Islamic faith and Muslims and anybody of that skin color. And it's just created this big hatred that I've noticed in my family.
Well, I thank you for calling, and I think you probably are onto something. 349-1320-866-626-1320. If you're just joining us, the New York Times said the following. At 9/11, we were all waiting to find out what it was we were supposed to do, to be called to the task that would give special lasting meaning to the tragedy that had endured. But the call never came. Without ever having asked to be exempt from the demands of this new post-9/11 world, we were cut out. Everything would be paid for with the blood of other people's children and with money earned by the next generation. The pinched view of our responsibility as citizens got us tax cuts we did not need and an invasion that would never have occurred if every voter's sons and daughters were eligible for the draft. 349-1320-866-626-1320. I think there's one line open. Justin in Sac. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Hi, Enid. I just had a quick comment regarding President Bush and his failed policies. Do you think, I mean, this may be an optimistic view, but do you think in the long run this may be good for the country?
How would it be that
it gets more people involved in politics? I don't agree with just about anything he has done, but I do believe that it is waking a few people up, and that it does affect people's daily lives. I don't think anybody before President Bush, I don't think anybody really understood how much the president himself can affect everybody's daily lives.
Well, Justin, I really hope you're right about that. Can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 26.
Are very many of your friends interested in politics?
What's that?
Are very many of your friends interested in politics?
No, not nearly enough.
Well, so it enraged you and it engaged you.
Yes.
But I don't know if it has had that effect on a significant number of people. It's certainly enraged and engaged me, but I don't know how many of us there really are, percentage-wise.
Yeah, I don't know how many people, percentage-wise, it's going to turn and get engaged, but I really hope that maybe it won't be this election. I mean, this coming up election, but by 2008, hopefully people will turn around and see that this is it has major effects on our daily life.
It has
the economy in general.
Oh, you are so right about that. I thank you for calling. 349-1320, 866-626, 1320. Ken, in Orangevale. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Hi, Enid.
Hi.
I have two answers for your question as to how we've changed. I saw this coming up through the 90s, and it crystallized after 9/11, but I think to a very large degree, citizens of this country have become capitulant lemmings. They'll do what they're told. They'll jump when they jump. They'll be scared when they're told to be scared, and they will not question authority. I think the second thing, too, is, and this ABC programming should be the absolute bellwether, we are a fascist regime now. Really, honestly, we need to start talking about democracy probably in the past tense. Fascism has blossomed in this country across the board.
How are you defining fascism?
The interconnectedness of both business and centralized government for the benefit of a very few wealthy.
Well, that is certainly what, I don't know if that's the dictionary definition of fascism, but that is certainly a description of what this administration has wrought.
And you know where you can...
They wanted tax cuts. Here's what they wanted. On September 12th, they already had a tax cut plan in place. On September the 12th, the day after 9/11. I mean, that shows you what the priorities were.
You know, I can actually trace this back to one event when this all changed towards fascism. It's when we deregulated the FCC. When the stockholders of these companies turned their news divisions into infotainment divisions based on making money, that's when we started...
Well, the FCC, I don't believe, has been deregulated.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean the Telecommunications Bill of 1996.
That was a horrible bill.
That's when this all started, because nobody is going to affect their bottom line. And if the majority of the stockholders are Republicans, these companies, in regards to their news gathering organizations, are going to do nothing to rock.
But I don't think this is the cause. I don't think you can trace it all to this one thing. I think, as David Korn put it in the last hour, there are various vectors going on, and they all sort of converged, and this is the result that we have. But I thank you, Ken, for the call. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. Is Ken right? Kathy in Grass Valley. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Hi, Enid.
Hi.
I called because I watched the mockumentary.
Did you watch it? I did not watch it last night, and part two is tonight, and... And let me just say one thing before I get a report from you on it. Paul Krugman in today's New York Times, and he'll be in the B tomorrow, he says, you know, it portrays that Clinton had a clear shot at Osama bin Laden, which he did not, but that this administration did, Bush administration did have a clear shot at Osama bin Laden, and that was at Tora Bora, and they took a hike. Tell me what your thoughts were on seeing part one.
You know what? It was so, I sat there and I waited to be outraged. I was all set to be just completely outraged by this thing, everything I'd heard. Mostly what I was bored. It was so slow, so awful. Madeleine Albright was just a horrible, horrible, spiteful woman. The other woman in it kept crying while all the men around her remained calm. They had little hits in it. If this had happened in America, we couldn't have done it because we have to get approval to wiretap. You don't even have the right to protect yourself from terrorism. There were little jabs in it.
Well, supposedly the screenwriter is a friend of Rush Limbaugh's. And some of the reviews, and there weren't too many that we found, called it wooden, called it slow. Is that jive with what you saw?
It was painfully boring. In fact, in the beginning, it had a disclosure saying that certain pieces had been developed or changed for dramatic effect. And I thought, boy, did you miss any dramatic effect? This thing is so boring. The character development was so poor. You couldn't follow it except with a crib sheet.
Well, I'm... You should have done the review for it. Bolton, they were thrilled to have all the publicity. But, you know, here's the story. It's as cheap as this administration. Nobody cares about the facts anymore. The facts are just things to throw around in order to get ratings and to manipulate at will. And it's like an administration that wants to sell you a bill of goods. And all of it seems to be of a piece. Kathy, I thank you very much for the call and for this review.
Thank you, Enid.
You're welcome. 349-1320-866-626-1320. Did you watch that mockumentary, the hackumentary, and what are your thoughts about it? And the question I'm asking, and we have a lot of political stuff, which I want to get to also, the question I'm asking is, how are we changed in the wake of 9/11? I think that when you use fear to manipulate people, you make them less powerful. And when you finish the job of the hijackers, which is that they, you know, this is a handful of people doing terrorism on a budget. We have finished the job that they began. This is just a few people. And look what we did. We just folded. We got scared. The administration saw that it could use this to manipulate us. And that is exactly what it has done. 349-1320-866-626-1320. Not to mention that we are in historic deficits. I mean, the money thing here. At the same time, tax cuts going to the richest Americans. In every way, we are just becoming a shell of what we were. And one of the genius parts of this democracy is that rich and poor would pull together. People would go to the same public schools. People would chip in. People would do things together. Now it's more and more gated. The haves have way more than the have-nots. They're the people who send their sons and daughters to Iraq and the rest of us who stand by watching it go on. I mean, when we wanted to roll up our sleeves and do something in the wake of 9/11, the only advice we got from this White House was go shopping. Well, I would like to dispatch them shopping in the next election. I'm Enid Goldstein, and you are listening to the Monday edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Well, thank you very much, Eden. I think the only thing that Madeline Albright would be spiteful or angry about, maybe the streets of Sacramento this afternoon. Southbound 99 by Fruit Ridge Road. Amazing traffic. We're doing about 5, maybe 10 miles an hour. Stops and goes. 3 car crashes. I have one at Fruit Ridge Road, southbound 99. Mack Road 99. Elk Grove Boulevard at southbound 99 as well. Now coming northbound 99 on the right-hand side, just before you hit the octopus when you take 50, we've got a 3-car crash there as well. Enid Live continues. We're at 89 at AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Keeping the metal to the pedal. It's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
New rule, stop whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the 3 blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more
are celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
The Internet. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. Your own personal Internet. That is you and me. You and me is that. Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. Now, Kaida Sell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes region, to folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, ups, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's radio in the left zone. You're listening to Eat It Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Na na na. Na na na. Dear Mr. President, come take a walk with me.
Take a walk with me.
Let's pretend we're just two people and you're not better than me. I'd like to ask you some questions if we can speak honestly. What do you feel when you see all the homeless on the street? Who do you pray for at night before you go to sleep? What do you feel when you look in the mirror? Are you proud?
On the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live, I am yours until 7 on AM 1320 Sacramento's left channel. We have a line open, 349-1320 or 866-626-1320. The question I am asking is, how are you and how are we different in this 5 years? Are we stronger? Are we weaker? Have our containers gone screened in our ports? No. The luggage still goes unscreened in the cargo holds of airplanes, and particularly from commercial shippers. All of it is an illusion, and I just hear many of Katrina's migrant workers go unpaid. People who were helping doing the cleanup in another tragedy, Katrina, migrant workers, unpaid. your sons and daughters, other people's children's, going off to war, and listening to Al Franken today, the signature war injury of this war are head trauma, brain injuries, because, you know, there are, there, if you're lucky enough to have the armored vests and so on, body armor that will prevent some of the usual war injuries. And this administration has cut the funding for treating those kinds of injuries in half, the amount that maybe one really rich person gets in a tax cut. So there's money for tax cuts, and that was the first thing proposed on 9/12, actually, 5 years ago. But for the rest of us, well, this is an administration that would like your vote and will tell you anything that you want to hear, that they think you want to hear, in order to get your vote. But does it really care about you? And are we stronger? Are we more empowered? Or has fear been used to manipulate us and make us weaker? 349-1320, 866-626-1320. Dan in North Highlands. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Hello.
Hi, Dan. Welcome.
Hi, Enid. Two comments. First of all, this administration has never woken up one morning and said, what can I do good for the American people today? In fact, it's just the opposite. The second thing is this ABC miniseries on 9/11.
Yeah.
All this is, all that is, it's a ploy to get people arguing about whether it's the Republicans or Democrats' fault instead of paying attention to the real issue, which is government complicity. That's all I got. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate the call. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. I want to also talk. The question I'm asking is, how are we different in 9/11? How have we changed? Richard Clark, who is an ABC consultant, blasted the first installment of the mockumentary. He was the former counterterrorism czar under Presidents Clinton and Bush, currently an ABC News consultant, and the mockumentary is on ABC. And he says the entertainment division hired a production company and a screenwriter who are apparently unqualified to deal with this historically important subject matter. That error appears to have been compounded by the failure of some of the docudrama's consultants to ensure that the account was accurate. So, in every way, no. You know, in every way, everybody's always trying to get something out of something. The ABC's trying to get ratings out of it. ABC is it's about ratings and it's about revenues. It's not about telling the truth. Everybody's trying to strip mine. The administration was trying to strip mine 9/11 in order to use it as a pretext for going to war in Iraq, and also a pretext to cut taxes that we need. Oh, and the Patriot Act and all the surveillance. So they want to strip mine us all out of what remains of our civil liberties. While we weren't looking, if we're talking about getting strip mined for our votes, let's go right to our back door. And let's talk about California, and let's talk about the governor. When nobody was looking, the governor added a little provision here, his administration did, so that salaries could be 125% of Schwartz's. Without the knowledge of most state lawmakers, a last-minute bill amendment that allows Governor Schwarzenegger to approximately double the salaries of his top appointees was slipped into a legislation ratifying a new contract with the CHP. The bill, which passed overwhelmingly in both houses of the legislature, contains two short paragraphs allowing the Department of Personnel Administration to boost the pay of Schwartz's cabinet secretaries, department directors, and commissioners to as much as 125% of the governor's salary, which climbs to $206,500 in December, and I guess he doesn't take his salary. But this means that if the administration adopts a maximum increase, for example, the salaries of department heads would more than double from $123,255 to $258,000, $258,125. So from $123,000 to $258,000 in this administration. And it wasn't done with any kind of transparency. Originally, the administration sought to increase the pay of just one person, the head of the state's prison system, who is currently paid $131,412 as a cabinet secretary, but legislative leaders didn't feel comfortable singling out just one cabinet secretary. So they sort of did this when nobody was looking. You know, it's interesting. The latest poll information I see has the governor still leading Phil by 13 points. And, you know, Phil, I don't know what he's doing. He must be on antidepressants or something, or sleeping pills, because who knows where he is. He sort of continues to be missing in action. And here is Schwartzy. At the same time, while he is pretending to be a Democrat and to be a centrist and to be for the people, he's engaging in all these subterfuges which really reveal who he actually is, and people don't want to see through it. Just like people did not want to see that that the administration was lying to the extent that it's lying. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. So here you have Schwarzenegger. And if that isn't bad enough, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger was not inspecting the orange crops when he slipped out of the state for a quick trip to Florida. He wasn't even eyeing Catherine Harris, apparently, and he wasn't eyeing a new set of wheels when he visited with car dealers. Nor was he parched as he bellied up to liquor dealers in Lake Tahoe, or craving a burger when he chatted with the jack-in-the-box owners. Rather, he was gobbling up campaign money at each stop. As legislators were approving more than 1,000 bills in August, Schwartzy was crossing the state and the country soliciting campaign cash. Now, as he decides whether to sign those bills into law or nix them with a veto, he will be cashing checks from scores of contributors whose interests intersect with legislation. Schwartzy is vastly outraising his Democratic challenger, Phil Angelides. He has taken in $26.4 million in his reelection account so far this year, compared with Angelides' $13.4 million, according to records filed with the Secretary of State's office. Last week alone, Schwartzy held 5 fundraisers, including 2 on Friday in the Central Valley, 2 in L.A., and 1 in suburban Sacramento. He has scheduled at least 22 such events this month, so almost one a day. This is exactly the kind of practice he said he was going to Sacramento to end, said Angelides consultant Bill Carrick. As a candidate in the 2003 recall election, Schwartzy called for fundraising blackout periods covering times when weighty decisions were being made. The proposal was a swipe at then-Governor Gray Davis, the man Schwartzy ousted, who used the months when he was signing bills as prime fundraising season. Schwartzy never followed through on his own idea. And even a former governor, Republican governor George Duke Majan, who is a Schwartzy backer, and who chastised Davis for raising money during bill signings, has criticized Schwartzy just last week. Personally, he says, I think that should be avoided because it is a very sensitive time. Duke Majan said, it is the appearance. I'm sure Schwartzy wouldn't do anything in exchange for a contribution. Oh, really? Are you so sure? Really? Really sure? But it does give the appearance that should be avoided. So Schwartzy's for rent. Schwartzy's for sale. Schwartzy's raising money left and right for people who have legislation coming before him. And when nobody was looking, they passed this provision which would double and then some of these salaries. Nobody knew about it. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. You and I can see through this. Just like you and I knew in the run-up to the war in Iraq that it was complete BS. We knew it. We knew there wasn't anything there. You just knew it. It didn't matter what the New York Times said. In fact, I was appalled. I really thought they were going to expose what I could tell was going on, and they didn't. So I thought, you know, once the New York Times signed down, final nail in the coffin, we're going to war, and everybody couldn't wait, and this was good, and we were going to avenge 9/11. And I'm thinking, am I the only person here who wonders what this connection is with 9/11? You really could see through this. And those of us who have an IQ slightly higher than room temperature can see through this governor, too. If I ask you the question, what's he done for California? What's he done for you? Nobody, people who call in to tell me how supportive they are of him, nobody's got an answer for it. I haven't heard a good answer yet. And now he's posturing as a Democrat. He's going to try and seduce you out of your vote. He may very well be successful. Right now he's leading Phil by 13 points. I think it's 13 points, which is really distressing. and he's got a lot more money. And people who can't wait to shove money at him because they have legislation pending. And Schwartzy can't wait to grab it. Just can't wait. Even with all that makeup on his hands, you'd think his hands would be so slippery he might drop some of it. But you know there's probably somebody there with a bucket who will catch it. 349-1320 or whatever, what other emissions might there be as well. 349-1320, 866, 626-1320. I'm Enid Goldstein, and you're listening to the Monday edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. We have quite a bit of traffic going on, and as we are the hit-and-run capital of California, we have several of them. Florin Road up French Road, that's in South Sac. Westbound 50 at 59th Street. And it looks like southbound I-5 at Pocket Road. Now, that's in a hit-and-run, but that hazard is in the middle of the roadway. We also have a three-car crash, Q Street and West 2nd Street. And there's a vehicle in the roadway there. Enid Live continues at AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
More buzz than an afternoon caffeine break. It's Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. A liberal dose of the truth applied daily.
Hey, Heidi, check out the...
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next, burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
New rule, Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, is Showdown at Cache Creek 2. The 8 action-packed mixed martial arts match card features in the main event Mike Whitehead from Spike's Ultimate Fighter 2 against Zane Frazier from UFC 1 and 9. Plus special guest appearances by 3-time UFC champion Dan the Beast Severn and MMA legend Boz Rutten. Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, visit cachecreek.com for more details.
Hi, I'm Scott Farrington, morning co-host on AM 1320's Morning Retort. More young people are becoming infected with AIDS than ever before. But now you can be part of the solution. Help raise awareness and save lives by joining me and show up for the Sacramento Valley AIDS Run and Walk. Sunday, September 17th at the west steps of the state capitol. Registration begins at 7:30 and proceeds benefit HIV/AIDS nonprofit agencies in the region. You can make a difference. To find out more, go to 1320leftchannel.com.
Freedom cannot be forced into existence, nor can it be won through painful struggle.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Freedom cannot be bought or sold. It has nothing to do with one's social status. One's profession is of no consequence.
Sacramento's Left Channel.
In order for you to accept yourself as you are and live with your soul at peace, you must simply teach yourself to let it be. Only then will you discover freedom.
And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
Hi, this is Jackie Schultz.
And Nisa Davis-Hayden.
From the Studio Theater in downtown Sacramento.
And we need your support.
We have a great show at the theater, and we want to make a special offer to all of you AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel listeners. Our show is the Tony-nominated musical Pump Boys and Dinettes. Come see the show that audience members are saying will melt your troubles away.
Welcome to Highway 57, somewhere between Frog Level and Smyrna. It's 1982, and on one side of the road is a gas station run by four happy-go-lucky guys who provide service with a smile. Opposite, the Cup Sisters own the diner where fun is always on the menu.
The entire performance is filled with humor and song and transports the audience to a simpler, more relaxed time.
Each AM 1320 listener that mentions this ad gets $5 off their ticket. Pump Boys and Dinettes plays Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 2 through October 8. Call the box office at 446-2668 or go to thestudiotheater.net. We need your support.
America's problems yet, so we're working on it. AM 1320,
Sacramento's Left Channel.
It's your right to listen to the left.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Darkest hour, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be, yeah, let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. When all the broken hearted people
on the Enid Live show. You're listening to the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live. You can call 349-1320 or 866-620-1320. We're talking, really the question running through the entire broadcast today is how are we changed since 9/11? Remember now that 30% of us don't remember what year 9/11 occurred in. Here are some headlines that maybe give you a sense of where we are now. Many of Katrina's migrant workers go unpaid. Is the U.S. winning this war? Many inside the U.S. government say no. Another headline, worried CIA officers are buying legal insurance, planning fund defenses in anti-terror cases. Are these the headlines associated with a strong country? Here is an editorial on today's Be a Nation Divided, 5 years after 9/11, and we've lost something. We've lost it all. I think we've lost a lot. And I hope it's not too late to regain it, but I wonder. 349-1320-866-620-1320, because for partisan reasons, we've been manipulated by fear, and we continue to be manipulated. In every way, we're manipulated. We're manipulated when they want to sell us a product. We're manipulated by this administration that wants to sell us the product of itself and Republicans in general, so they're using fear to manipulate us. We have a gubernatorial election on in the state of California where we're also being manipulated, and people are happy to be manipulated. I guess we want to be. We don't, you know, it's like watching those infomercials at 3 o'clock in the morning. We want to believe. We want to believe Arnold is really an action hero. Even though he plays one, he wears lifts, he wears a lot of makeup, he dyes his hair. Who knows if he's wearing a girdle or not, even for all we know, a brassiere. I don't know. But he is everybody's action hero, I guess. And Phil could really be stepping on the gas here, and he's not stepping on the gas. I used to be on the blast list for about 2 seconds from that campaign, and now I'm not. I wonder if anybody is. 349-1320-866-626-1320, Ted in Marysville. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 13.
Yeah, hi, Enid. You were rattling off how many different cabinet secretaries and deputy thises and thats could be eligible for getting raises. And I'm thinking about, okay, what's the total cost if everybody took those raises? And if you look beyond that at how raises may be tied to benefit increases, what is that costing the entire state of California? And was that ever outlined within the bill that got passed?
Well, the bill hardly outlined. It was such a stealth bill; it was tacked onto something else entirely. That most people, I never even saw any reporting on it in the Bee. Now, maybe there was something on it and I missed it, but I saw this in the San Francisco Chronicle.
And what was the final passage of the bill? How many people voted for it? And what do we look like numbers in the Senate and the Assembly?
The bill did. I don't have the numbers. I don't think, but it cleared both houses handily, both parts of the Assembly and the Senate.
I wonder if you polled both Republican, allegedly fiscal conservatives, and Democrats as well, who voted for the bill, and asked them, did they have any idea what kind of an answer we'd get? And if that's the case, we need to be taking that into account when we're voting in November because of that.
Well, there's money for this, but if you want universal health care, if you want, Schwartz said that we couldn't afford that. We couldn't afford universal health care. We can't afford not to have universal health care. Well, California could have really set the stage for it.
We need our levees repaired, particularly up in my area. I've covered more floods than I care to cover. Thank you.
Well, we do need our levees repaired, and we also need a prison system that's not in meltdown. One of the latest ideas being floated by this administration is that we'd ship some of our prisoners to Florida. Have you heard that idea? That they're going to ship some of our prisoners?
We ought to take care of our own. I mean, who wants to go send somebody from California to where they could get blown away by a hurricane?
Well, that's right.
Maybe that's the idea.
Well, the idea is it's like those states that don't have a place for garbage or nuclear waste. They want to ship it to some place that'll be happy to take it, and that we can pay them for it. And so now we're trafficking in human beings, and we're going to send them to Florida where they can get a better tan, I guess, than they can in California. Something like that. Ted, I thank you very much for the call. You raised some very intriguing points. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. The governor shifted his loyalties from the Esquire Grill. I guess he's not. I guess his people aren't happy that Randy Perugary had a fundraiser in his home for a Democratic candidate. Oh, for Phil Angelides, who I guess is still running for governor, but who would know it? I mean, you don't. Where is there anything in the paper about it? Where is Phil? Well, maybe if we. I wonder if we'll have him on. I wonder. Well, maybe we'll have him on. And he can tell us what he's been up to and how come we haven't heard from him. And where is, why isn't Fabian Nunez helping Phil? Where is he on this whole thing? Where is he when we need Democrats to rally around Phil Angelides, our candidate? He's still in Los Angeles smoking cigars with his legislative buddies. This is a letter to the editor and the Bee. Our Democratic legislature needs to stand for some issues that are non-negotiable. Where's Fabian? He's straddling the middle fence as usual. Where is Fabian? How come he's not supporting Phil? That would be the question, isn't it? And where is Phil? How isn't he going to town on? Oh, and the governor's getting into the soup last week about calling that Bonnie Garcia hot. Remember that? And I don't think he meant her temperament either. I don't think that's what he was talking about. The LA Times was quick to jump to that conclusion, but not moi, your radio goddess, who's always been single and knows when a guy says hot what he's really talking about here. Well, it turns out they think
that's hot.
They think, oh my gosh, they think that the governor's system was hacked by somebody. So there's a big investigation unfolding. The CHP is looking into it. And they're busy collecting twice. They're getting a salary increase. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. So in every way, since 9/11, 5 years, look at what we have become. We're debt ridden. We are more politicized. There's less interest in the common good except for when candidates are running for office and then they profess to be men of the people or women of the people. And the minute they get into office, forget about it. They're lining their pockets. It's business as usual. They're cutting quick deals. They're looking for their next job. In the case of Schwartz, maybe senator down the line. We have not become better, and we have become weaker. And our goodwill has been squandered, and lives have been wasted. 349-1320-866-620-61320. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Monday 9/11 edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together for the Left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. Well, it looks like we have a couple of car crashes. Our hit and runs northbound 116 northbound Cap City Freeway. Hit and run at southbound 99 at Sutterville Road. A hit and run Florin Road and French Road. We have a hit and run, southbound 99 at Sutterville Road. There's two of them there. Northbound 99 at Mingo Road. And that's a three-car crash due to a hit and run. So, unfortunately, our hit and run capital of California is absolutely proving itself today on this Monday. Now, Enid Live continues coming up. I'm Lisa West for traffic and weather from the Left. It's 89 at AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel.
Right now it's new rule. No more whining about the French. At least they're standing up to the Bush administration, which is more than I can say for the Democrats. And by the way, it doesn't make me un-American to say I'd rather live in Paris than in places where cheese only comes in individually wrapped slices. New rule. Secretary Ridge, we know you're running this huge Orwellian organization. There's no need to rub our face in it. New rule. No gay fraternities. Apparently there are now dozens of them. Why bother? If you're gay, you already have a much better way of bonding with another man than the chug-a-lug. The dirty show this week.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sacjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sacjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sacjobs.com is a click away. At sacjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
So hot today in New York City, that naked guy on the subway was screaming, "Who's crazy now?"
Hot.
Got it. Hot down in Washington, D.C., Dick Cheney replaced his pacemaker with an ice maker.
Wow.
Is that hot? It's so hot, Christy Brinkley is now dating Ben and Jerry.
Whoa!
It's so hot today, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush told Al Roker to stop doing that. That's what he said. That's what President Bush said at the G8 summit. He was overheard using a dirty language at the G8 summit. And not only that, later he was ejected for headbutting.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320. Talk to Enid at 349-1320.
Trust me.
5:57 on the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live, and I hope that you vote and vote the rascals out is what I hope. 349-1320-866-626-1320. A couple of things. And first of all, if you're watching that hackumentary, that hackudrama.
Listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel.
CBS News.com.
Ending a day of ceremonies marking the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, President Bush is about to address the nation from the Oval Office. He will say the enemy remains determined to bring death and suffering into our homes. And acknowledging those opposed to his handling of the war, he will say that winning it requires the determined efforts of a unified country. Excerpts released in advance show he will ask that Americans put aside their differences and work together in traveling the difficult road ahead. I'm Mark Noller at the White House. With more CBS News, here is Bill Whitney.
Bells rang a reminder of the awful moments in New York 5 years ago when two hijacked planes hit the Twin Towers and the towers fell. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive covered today's ceremony at Ground Zero.
Susan,
some local politicians gave speeches here, but above all, it was the families of the victims paying tribute to their loved ones in teams of two, taking turns, reciting the names of more than 2,700 people who died here. There were many firefighters paying tribute to 343 of their colleagues killed when the Twin Towers collapsed right here.
And my love, my husband, and my best friend.
At the Pentagon, an emotional Donald Rumsfeld.
5 years have passed since our country was drawn into a war not of our making.
This is Jim Crisil in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The rolling countryside of the Keystone State bathed in the haunting sound of Amazing Grace. Hundreds have gathered to remember the victims of Flight 93 who perished here while challenging their hijackers. Frank Werer lost a granddaughter.
It's nice to be here with all the other family members, and it's very comforting to be here and to know that everybody realizes that this is a very important day for all of us.
President and Mrs. Bush laying a wreath and consoling, comforting, uplifting the now extended family.
On the steps of the U.S. Capitol this evening, members of Congress gathered to do something they did spontaneously on September 11, 2001. Chicago Mayor Richard Daley has vetoed an ordinance that would have required so-called big box stores to pay higher wages. He says it would keep major retailers away, hurting the city's economy.
Sales tax, if there's no growth, then basically the only tax you have locally is a property tax. And that is the major issue.
Walmart says Daley's decision is a victory for working families. On Wall Street today, the Dow Industrial's up nearly 5 points to 11,396. This is CBS News.
No doubt about it, the Internet is a great place to hang out. Like blogging, for example. I love to blog. Maybe too much, when I think of all the hours I've blogged. Anyway, you've probably spent a lot of time on the Internet, too. Isn't it time the Internet paid you back? Just 15 minutes at GEICO.com could save you hundreds on car insurance. Now that's what I call payback.
Go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Where do you want to be?
Everybody has a different idea of the perfect home.
Now that the kids are grown, we want a smaller place.
We really need more room. There's a baby on the way.
I'll take a place with a garage for my new baby.
Find your perfect place. It's easy at REMAX.com. Now REMAX.com has more home listings to choose from than ever. Nobody sells more real estate than REMAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
A busy day in orbit, starting with a successful link-up of Shuttle Atlantis and the International Space Station.
This morning's docking was just the first part of a jam-packed day for the shuttle and station crews.
One of the fullest days I've ever put together on paper for a mission, and they're handling it extremely well.
Lead Flight Director Paul Dye says the docking was as perfect as any he's ever seen. The crew's taken a 17-ton solar power truss out of the shuttle's cargo bay. It'll be attached to the space station, then hooked up during three spacewalks, which start tomorrow. Peter King, CBS News.
If there are no balloons next time you go to a party, it might be due to the worldwide helium shortage. Some party stores have cut back or raised helium prices because at the moment there's not enough of the lighter-than-air gas to go around. Three helium plants in the Middle East are offline. And the U.S. Bureau of Land Management says its production will be reduced for maintenance, but things should be fine for the Macy's Thanksgiving parade. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Diane Mintz is a realtor. She helps
Jackson.
Enid Live continues on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel.
6:05, 5 minutes after 6 o'clock. Welcome to the Monday and special 9/11 edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 7 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. I thought what we would do would be to check into the president who's got all these fine words to say right now, presidential address in prime time. Let's hear what he's got to say, and then maybe we can all comment on it, and I really want to have your comments. Here he is, Dickie.
Most of those who planned the 9/11 attacks, including the man believed to be the mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He and other suspected terrorists have been questioned by the Central Intelligence Agency. And they provided valuable information that has helped stop attacks in America and across the world. Now these men have been transferred to Guantanamo Bay so they can be held to account for their actions. Osama bin Laden and other terrorists are still in hiding. Our message to them is clear. No matter how long it takes, America will find you. And we will bring you to justice.
He's going to find and bring him to justice. He had a clear shot at Tora Bora, and then guess what? We took a powder. All these fine words, and does anybody hold him to account? He was talking about all the fine people who did all this fine work at 9/11 after the tragedy struck, but he never talked about how his own administration didn't tell people how toxic those chemicals were, and now many of the people who are helping at 9/11 have serious lung issues and serious respiratory problems.
And after 9/11, Saddam's regime posed a risk that the world could not afford to take. The world is safer because Saddam Hussein is no longer in power.
What did Saddam have to do? What does Saddam have to do with 9/11?
It fulfills the dreams of the nearly 12 million Iraqis who came out to vote in free elections last December. Al-Qaeda and other extremists from across the world have come to Iraq to stop the rise of a free society in the heart of the Middle East.
Iraq has functioned as a recruiting magnet for jihadists everywhere.
And other armed groups to foment sectarian violence and drive us out. Our enemies in Iraq are tough and they are committed, but so are Iraqi and coalition forces. We are adapting to stay ahead of the enemy. And we are carrying out
we've
a clear
been defeated.
Plan to
translated, this means Iraq. I'm going to provide the simultaneous translation here. It means we've been Iraq defeated in Iraq, which had nothing whatever to do with 9/11.
We're helping Iraq's unity government grow in strength and serve its people. We will not.
They don't have electricity most of the time, and its people are in worse shape than when Saddam Hussein, now, who now looks like a saint, compared to what's going on there now.
The terrorists would leave us alone. They will not leave us alone. They will follow us. The safety of America depends on the outcome of the battle in the streets of Baghdad.
Well, if it does, we're in trouble.
This fight, the Third World War. And he says that victory for the terrorists in Iraq will mean America's defeat and disgrace forever. If we yield Iraq to men like bin Laden, our enemies will be emboldened.
I think bin Laden is in Pakistan, isn't he? I don't think he's in
Iraq.
Bin Laden is in Pakistan. Maybe we could be looking in Pakistan.
We will not allow this to happen. America will stay in the fight. Iraq will be a free nation.
We're going to stay in the fight, throwing good money after bad.
We can be confident that our coalition will succeed. Because the Iraqi people have been steadfast in the face of unspeakable
I don't think we have
violence.
A coalition anymore. I think they all left.
And we can be confident in victory because of the skill and the
They went out at the intermission. They're not coming
forces.
Back. They went out for a pack of cigarettes. They're not coming back.
This is a volunteer. And since the attacks of September the 11th, more than 1.6 million Americans have stepped forward to put on our nation's uniform. In Iraq, Afghanistan...
Did he mention that he's cutting the budget for the head traumas, the signature injury of this war? Did he say that part yet?
To keep us safe. Some have suffered terrible injuries. And
this is the part where he could say. This is the part where he could say that they cut
America
the budget for the head traumas.
We pray for their families, and we will never back down from the work they have begun. We also honor those who toil day and night to keep our homeland safe.
Are Jenna the twins? Are they going to Iraq? I haven't heard that they're going to Iraq. I think they're going to parties, actually.
We have torn down the wall that kept law enforcement and intelligence from sharing information. We've tightened security at our airports and seaports and borders.
Yes, and we've made the world safe for chapstick.
We've created new programs to monitor enemy bank records and phone calls.
Yes, we're listening into your phone calls. We haven't caught anybody yet.
Thanks to law enforcement and intelligence professionals, we have broken up terror cells in our midst.
Yeah, those
American
Miami
lives.
Guys that didn't even have boots.
5 years after
9/11,
our enemies have not succeeded in launching another attack on our soil. But they've not been idle. Al-Qaeda and those inspired by its hateful ideology have carried out terrorist attacks in more than 24 nations. And just last month, they were foiled in a plot to blow up passenger planes headed for the United States. They remain determined to attack America and kill our citizens, and we are determined to stop them.
So maybe we could inspect our ports? Maybe we can inspect the cargo that goes in planes?
They need to do their jobs. In the first days after the 9/11 attacks, I promised to use every element of national power to fight the terrorists wherever we find them.
Yes, tax cuts, that will do it.
One of the strongest weapons in our arsenal is the power of freedom. The terrorists fear freedom as much as they do our firepower. They are thrown into panic at the sight of an old man pulling
the election lever. Did he say firepower or did he say fart power?
Girls enrolling in schools.
Firepower.
Or families worshiping God in their own traditions. They know that given a choice, people will choose freedom over their extremist ideology. So their answer is to deny people this choice by raging against the forces of freedom in moderation. This struggle has been called a clash of civilizations. In truth, it is a struggle for civilization. We're fighting to maintain the way of life enjoyed by free nations. And we're fighting for the possibility that good and decent people across the Middle East can raise up societies based on freedom and tolerance and personal dignity. We are now in the early hours of this struggle between tyranny and freedom. Amid the violence, some question whether the people of the Middle East want their freedom.
Well,
and whether the forces of moderation can prevail.
These are fine and pretty
years,
words with attached to no substance whatsoever, but
and
it's kind of fun to listen
September
to them.
Morning, it became clear that the calm we saw in the Middle East was only a mirage. Years of pursuing stability to promote peace had left us with neither. So we changed our policies and committed America's influence in the world to advancing freedom and democracy as the great alternatives.
So what did this have to do with 9/11 exactly? Did he get to the part about what Iraq had to do with 9/11?
The Middle East are now stepping forward to claim their freedom.
Has he mentioned that? Maybe I missed that. That might have been earlier.
There are brave men and women risking their lives each day for the same freedoms that we enjoy. And they have one question for us. Do we have the confidence to do in the Middle East what our fathers and grandfathers accomplished in Europe and Asia?
Oh, Europe and Asia, the greatest generation.
Leaders and reformers. By giving voice to the hopes
this
of decent men.
This has already gone on longer than World War II, actually.
Offering a path away from radicalism. And we are enlisting the most powerful force for peace and moderation in the Middle East. The desire of millions to be free. Across the broader Middle East, the extremists are fighting to prevent such a future.
Okay, so what he's selling is that we are providing, we are the agents of peace in the Middle East, we're giving them democracy, all these pretty words, when in fact we have failed in the Middle East, we have failed in Iraq.
He could not have foreseen D-Day and Iwo Jima.
Oh, D-Day and Iwo Jima, we have to get those in.
At the outcome. When Harry Truman
Franklin Roosevelt, he's going to quote Franklin Roosevelt. Is he going to say we have nothing to fear but fear itself?
He could not have foreseen the rise of the Berlin Wall. But he would not have been surprised to see it brought down. Throughout our history, America has seen liberty challenged. And every time, we have seen liberty triumph with sacrifice and determination.
Sacrifice. Go shopping. That was the sacrifice. Remember that part?
America looks to the day when the people of the Middle East leave the desert of despotism for the fertile gardens of liberty.
Desert of despotism. Somebody spent a lot of time looking up at their thesaurus for that one.
We look to the day when the nations of that region recognize their greatest resource is not the oil in the ground.
It isn't?
But the talent and creativity of their people.
Talent and creativity of
their people. We look to the day when moms and dads throughout the Middle East see a future of hope and opportunity for their children. And when that good day comes, the clouds of war will part. The appeal of radicalism will decline. And we will leave our children with a better and safer world. On this solemn anniversary, we rededicate ourselves to this cause. Our nation has endured trials, and we face a difficult road ahead. Winning this war will require the determined efforts...
Winning this failed war.
And we must put aside our differences and work together to meet the test that history
And I'm hoping to get a bump up in my approval ratings from this speech.
We will protect our people. And we will lead the 21st century into a shining age of human liberty.
If we're not completely bankrupt.
The United States Military Academy. I was there to deliver the commencement address to the first class to arrive at West Point.
He couldn't wait to go AWOL from the National Guard. He was at the Military Academy?
That day I met a proud mom named Rosalind Dowdell. She was there to watch her son Patrick accept his commission in the finest army the world has ever known.
Didn't they have a lot of versions of the story of Pat Tillman?
A few weeks earlier.
He's not mentioning that story with all the versions of it.
Graduate from the Fire Academy in New York City. On both these days, her thoughts turned to someone who was not there to share the moment. Her husband, Kevin Dowdell. Kevin was one of the 343 firefighters who rushed to the burning towers of the World Trade Center on September the 11th. And never came home.
When Rudolph Giuliani set up a communication center between fire and police that could not communicate with each other, many firemen were sent to their deaths.
As a mother, I cross my fingers and pray all the time for their safety. But as worried as I am, I'm also proud. And I know their dad would be too. Our nation is blessed to have young Americans like these, and we will need them. Dangerous enemies had declared their intention to destroy our way of life. They're not the first to try, and their fate will be the same as those who tried before. 9/11 showed us why.
Well, I think he's building to his crescendo. This was supposed to be a 15-minute speech, but it looks like it's going on and on and on. So there he is. Dickie, what do you think? Is he going to get any bounce off of this? 349-1320, 866, 626, 1320. I mean, Enid Goldstein, the irreverent Enid Goldstein. As he's sitting there telling one lie after another, a skewed version. It's now 6:17 and 36 seconds in Sacramento. How many people are home watching this thing or are they listening to the speech on their car radios? What do you think the outcome of this is? Do not write these people off. And the question I have been asking on this, the five-year anniversary of 9/11, the question, and if you're a Republican and you're insulted or you have thoughts about my running commentary under Dickey's speech, filled with half-truths, lies, pretty words, alliteration, and all the things that, that accompany that are part of a speech, you're free to call in as well. 349-1320, 866-626, 2613-20. We stream live, 1320leftchannel.com. You can email me, Enid@kctc.com. And just to give you a sense of what we've got cooking, which I didn't have a chance to do at the top of the hour, we had Michael Isikoff from Newsweek and David Corn from The Nation magazine on today. Their new book is Hubris. Tomorrow, Francine Prose, who's written a book called Reading Like a Writer, a guide for people who love books and for those who want to write them. Wednesday, Wayne Slater, who's covered Karl Rove for a lot of years, Dallas Morning News reporter, and James Moore have written a book about Karl Rove, a new one, Architect, Karl Rove and the Master Plan for Absolute Power. Thursday, Nora Ephron will join us. She's written I Feel Bad About My Neck and Other Thoughts on Being a Woman. It's gone number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And tomorrow, Francine Prose's book goes to the New York Times bestseller list as well. Monday, Edward Jones, Pulitzer and National Book Award winner, is the author of a new book, All Aunt Hager's Children. So all of these guests coming up. Let's go to the phones. What are your thoughts about Bush's speech, if you saw it, or if you better yet, if you listened to it here on Enid Live? Should I not have let you hear it here? Have we had enough of Dickey? Or is it good to have some running commentary under Dickey? Richard in Sac, hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Hello.
Hi, Richard.
How are you? I was listening to the speech that you were just playing, and God, it's just a crock. This guy is just, does it never end?
Well, but you think it's a crock, and you can see through it, but I don't know about other people. First of all, I don't know how many people are at home on the West Coast at this time watching either the network news or watching Dickey give a 9/11 speech. I think maybe it's very possible, and I mean no irreverence here, but it's very possible people are getting 9/11'd out.
They should. They keep reiterating and going back to the same old, and it never made sense 5 years ago, and it doesn't make sense today. So the fact that there's a lot of sheeple out there that continue to buy into this is disheartening, to say the least.
Well, it's very disheartening, but it means that if you want to save this civilization, you got to roll up your sleeves and get to it, because let's just hope that the sheeple you're talking about are too passive to actually get out there and do very much. So people who are active and smart need to try to rescue this country. I really think it's what it comes to. I hope I'm not over-dramatizing it, but I think this is a real corner turner. If we haven't already turned the corner.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope we have. And, you know, if you look at the rate, the polls that they take anymore, it's hard to believe it.
Yeah, but this is a crew. Forget the polls. Forget those polls, because this is a crew that will stop at nothing. They're trying to restrict voting. There's already a plan in place to do it, and Rove is part of it. And we'll talk about that when Wayne Slater comes on Wednesday. They're trying to restrict voting in a number of states. So people who are poor, who don't have driver's licenses, it amounts to a poll tax. And if you're a felon, it's very murky how you get to reinstate your voting rights. So assuming that you've served your time and you're a solid citizen again. So, but this is definitely not going to be a plus for Democrats.
Well, I hope we haven't waited too long, as far as, and I mean when I say we, the people that think like you and I hope we haven't waited too long to step up and do something, and it's not too late. So,
I hope you're right about that, Richard.
Just keep on trucking and keep doing what you're doing, and I'll try to help the best I can.
Well, I thank you. I thank you very much. 349-1320, 866, 626, 1320. I'm Enid Goldstein, and you're listening to the special 9/11, Monday 9/11 edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. Well, our weather, nice and breezy it's going to be tonight. That's good. 69 high tomorrow, about 91 or 92. We're at 89 here at the River City in our traffic. We do have a couple of hit and runs. It looks like Florin Road at French Road. We have one. The other ones, it looks like it's got to be cleared up. Our emergency vehicles are blocking the lane at northbound 99 at Mingo Road and southbound Cap City Freeway. Just north of East Street, we have a vehicle there. Now, Enid Live continues on this special edition on 9/11 and AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Check out.
Welcome to Los Angeles, where I believe the official sunscreen is now lead, isn't it, pretty much? Oh, my God, this heat. I was sweating like Naomi Campbell trying to hire a maid. It was so hot today. It was so hot in Hollywood today. Brad and Angelina adopted Ben and Jerry. Did you know that? It was so hot in Encino. Michael Jackson actually stopped at a young boy's lemonade stand and just bought the lemonade. You know the worst part about this heat wave across the country is Al Gore walking around going, I told you so. Actually, if Al Gore's movie on global warming is correct, as you know, the ice caps are shrinking. You all know about that. The glaciers are shrinking. The only thing not shrinking, Al Gore, apparently. Have you seen Al? Really not shrinking. I tell you, the heat, it puts people in a bad mood. You know, in fact, coming into work today, people were swearing like President Bush near an open mic. It was unbelievable.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Freedom, don't cheapen the word by using it to describe potatoes. Yeah. Ohio Representative Bob Ney found time in what must be a hectic schedule to rename French fries Freedom Fries, leading the French to rename American cheese Bob Ney. New rule, if you are the president, you have to have stuff on your desk. You just do it. It makes us feel better. It's just... New rule. Let Tony Blair do the talking. No, I say this sympathetically to Mr. President. You don't need to be doing the speechifying. You're like the Clint Eastwood character in a Western, the tough guy who doesn't say much. Tony Blair, he's the gay English character actor. Let him come in and lay the pipe. Plus, he's British. It just sounds smarter.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
New rule, get the Ashton Kutcher Demi Moore breakup over now. Let's just pretend we've already printed those issues of Us Weekly and People read them and thrown them away. And while we're at it, let's also pretend we've already heard Joe Lieberman drop out. New rule, in an all-volunteer army, there can be no such thing as a conscientious objector. Marine Stephen Funk says he shouldn't have to go to Iraq because he just joined the Marines to, quote, learn new things and meet new people. That's like joining the Beach Boys and then announcing you're not going to play that stupid surf music. We need Saddam Hussein's head. Stop talking about his DNA. Nobody made a movie called Bring Me the DNA of Alfredo Garcia. Traumatized Iraqis need to see the head on a pole in the center of Baghdad, or as it's now called, the Galleria at Halliburton Square.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's radio in the left zone. You're listening to Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Today is
obviously one of the most difficult days in the history of the city and the country.
The entire building has just collapsed. It's folded down on its
side. Another plane just flew in.
The whole side has collapsed.
The whole building has collapsed.
Once you need talk, you walk. Sit down, it's just a talk. Smiles politely back at you. You stare politely right on through. Some sort of window to your right. Seagulls left, and you stay right. Between the lines, fear and blame. You begin to wonder why you came. Where did I go wrong? I lost a friend. Stayed up with you all night. Had I known how to save a life.
Stopped at like 68, and there's a woman in a wheelchair, and I got her in the strap, just carried her down the steps,
and it was just chaos everywhere.
Let him know that you know best. After all, you do know best. Try to slip past his defense without granting consent. Of what is wrong, the things you told him all along, and pray to God he hears you, and pray to God he hears you. And where did I go wrong? I lost a friend somewhere along in the bitterness, and I would have stayed up with you all night had I known how to save a life.
Look at this, and say to yourself, why?
It seemed like it wasn't even real.
Big explosion happened. Some guy came out. And I helped him out.
He begins to raise his voice. You lower yours. Grant him one last choice. Drive until you lose the road. Or break with the ones you follow. He will do one of two things. He will admit to everything. He'll say he's just not the same. And you'll begin to wonder why you came. Where did I go wrong? I lost a friend somewhere along in the bitterness. And I could have stayed up with you all night. Had I known how to save a life. Where did I go wrong? I lost a friend somewhere.
I've never seen anything like it. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
How to save a life.
We all got to stick together.
It's a life-changing experience. You really appreciate everything.
I was very lucky to get out.
How to save a life.
I'm number 3 on flight 11.
A plane is crashing, Deborah. This is at the World Trade Center, sir. I have a woman that's hanging from the building from the northwest side of the One World Trade
Center. I agree with you that you need air, but I can't tell you to break a window. Now, I can't tell you if you're
floor number 88, building 2. You have a heavy smoke conditioning windows open up there. Break the windows. Break the windows.
September 11th will always be a national day of remembrance.
We're not going to be stopped. We're not going to be deterred. We're not going to stay at home. We're not going
to
be frightened. We're going to live our lives as Americans.
6:30 on the special Monday edition, 9/11 edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 7, 3 to 7 weekdays on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel. You can join the conversation at 349-1320, 866-626-1320. If you were listening just a few moments ago, we were running Dickey's speech and my running commentary along with it. And there are many things that I want to say, but the question that we've been asking throughout the broadcast today is, how have we changed since 9/11? Sharon, calling from Sacramento. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Yeah, I just wanted to report in on my homework.
Yes.
I've been telling two or three people a day, and they've been very, very happy to find there's an alternative out there.
Wow, thank you.
But today I took the assignment a bit further.
Okay.
I typed impeach on a piece of paper and put tape on that in the back windshield of my car. And then on the two sides, I put 1320. and so one really cute guy drove by me and gave me the thumbs up for the impeach, and then I made sure he got your radio station.
Well, I hope you don't mean that we should impeach 1320.
Oh, you're right. I'll have to edit it.
Okay. Oh, my God. So you are like a mobile reminder to people that we're here.
Yeah, remember.
You're a mobile billboard, sort of.
You can do windshield blogging.
Oh, my.
That's what you should assign everybody next.
All right.
Just make them sure they type the right thing like I did not do. No, he knew what I meant by impeach.
He did. I know. Yes. That's very good. But you don't want anybody to key your car. I mean, I'm trying to think in advance. You know, these Republicans, you know, they get a little demented. Who knows?
Oh, I think we ought to offer $1,000 to the best windshield blog myself.
Okay. So you're starting the windshield blog movement, Sharon.
Well, I could contribute $100.
Well, gosh, thank you so much. We're not going to call on you just yet.
Okay.
We're gonna put you on standby. I think your idea is worth way more than $100.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye. 349-1320. See, she did her homework assignment. Your homework assignment every day is to tell 3 to 5 people every single day that we are here. And if you're like Sharon and you're smart, you can do it via your automobile, and you don't have to assault people in the checkout line at the supermarket or at the post office anymore. You can just put it in your car, and you can be like a mobile blog mechanism for 1320. Richard in Granite Bay. Hi, you're live with Enid on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hello. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, welcome.
Welcome to me. Well, anyway, I'm glad to be with you. The whole idea of calling right now is I keep hearing people talk about what should be done and what bad conditions things are in. But what we're ignoring is the fact that we're on the edge right now of a great explosion in new and exciting things like television has gone crazy and is merging with computers. There's all kinds of other scientific advances in medicine and various other fields.
If
we put together a humanist party that was in favor of the human race and in favor of doing something really progressive and just simply, you know, $10.
So what you're really saying here is that there's much going on that's positive.
Right.
And we shouldn't be such doomsayers.
Well, we should be getting organized in order to get behind some of these progressive things.
Well, I cannot disagree with you on that, Richard. I thank you very much for reminding us. Yes, there are lots of... That's what's so interesting here about what's going on, because there's a lot of technological achievement going on. There's a lot of that still going on. But at the same time, I think you have a rotting structure. And I hope I'm not right about that. How many times have we picked up stories? Have we seen stories about faked research data? I mean, these are from some of our most sacrosanct academe people, fake data, because then they can get ahead in their careers. Doctors don't tell you when they're writing papers for medical journals that they're research or they've been funded by this drug company, that pharmaceutical house. They don't tell you any of that. And then they act like they're bent out of shape when you notice that they have been on the payroll of this or that drug company. It's like, oh, you think I can't be objective if I've been on the payroll of this or that drug company? It's like, huh? Here's what the research has told us. If you even give somebody a pen, one of those cheapy promo pens that people give out, they feel indebted to you. So think about what happens when you're on the payroll of a drug company. And then here you are, this country. As I was listening to that montage that Lisa West put together, she's put together all the fantastic music that you have heard on today's broadcast. When I listened to that montage, that sound, the picture I had is that there are so many good people here. We are such a good population. We are so, there's a lot of honesty. There's a lot of the good qualities, the salt of the earth qualities, the wanting to help each other kind of qualities. There's so much of that. And then you have a very cynical kind of an administration that is turning this magnificent country into a Potemkin village. And by that I mean it's just gutting so that all you have is the sort of appearance of a vibrant superpower. But the truth of the matter is China and India are on track, and we are to go up, and we're on track to go down. We are squandering huge amounts of money in Iraq. We are in historic deficits at the same time that we are giving the richest Americans tax cuts. And Paul Krugman has pointed out in column after column after column, and he's an economist, and he teaches at Princeton, and he writes for the New York Times. And I like to read what he has to say about the economy because I think he knows what he's talking about. And he has pointed out that in the history of this country, in many administrations, there are conscious efforts to push things one way or the other. After the war, and after the Depression, there had been the rich, like in these times now, and everybody else. And with laws and the way public policy and so on, a more equal situation ensued. And then, of course, you had all that boom post-World War II. And now you have a return to just a handful of the richest of the richest of the richest, and everybody else is having to scramble. And even in, for example, in California, and this is a survey that has everybody scratching their heads, you have greater productivity. States' wages are sort of a riddle. Economists are wondering why there's been all this productivity, but it has not translated into higher pay. Well, the richest of the richest of the richest, they make out okay. And the rest of us working, you know, doubling our productivity, working triple time, you know, just trying to keep it together, and jobs being outsourced, and tax credits for outsourcing jobs. So who's going to have a job? Who's going to be able to shop? Who's going to be able to buy the goods that that other segments of the economy are manufacturing? And then you have all the fakery that goes on. Rudy Giuliani was a flop. He was nowhere. There was video that caught him running away from 9/11. And you know, it was a day, he sounded right. His ratings were in the toilet. He had just come off of treatment for prostate cancer, I believe. He was cheating on his wife with his present wife, and sleeping on the couch of two gay friends, and because of the Donna Hanover wouldn't move out of Gracie Mansion. And I mean, he was just, and he did a lot of things that were wrong. They didn't caution people, the workers, nor did the federal government, about how dangerous it was to go down to the 9/11 site, that all of that toxicity was there. Many people didn't have respirators. They weren't being distributed. And a lot of people, good Samaritans, wanting to help, wanting to do whatever it took, going down there, and now suffering hugely for it. And the government turns its back on them, turns its back on us. We'll tell you whatever it thinks you will swallow in order to seduce you out of your vote, and then give you very little. 349-1320, 866-620-1320. So I think in all the meaningful ways, we're kind of a shell of our former selves. And I don't think we don't want to realize it. We haven't realized it. But one day, it'll just crumble. One day, it'll just implode upon itself, I think. I hope I'm wrong. I'd like to be wrong. I'd like it if we're just at that crossroads where we could roll up our sleeves and get it back on the right footing. If we'll do that, if we are committed enough to this wonderful country to do that, if we're committed enough to our future, our children's future, and so on. 349-1320, 866-620-1320. I'm Enid Goldstein, and you are listening to the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. But I do want to mention that I can't take full credit for all of the music. Yes, Lauren and I did come up with amazing stuff. However, our little brother station, Pat Martin at KRXQ 98 Rock, helped us out. Steve Weed and Matt Wheeler at 107.9 The End, our little sister station, and 96.9 The Eagle, Brian Lopez, helped me out a lot. So, you know, I just went around the building.
Yeah, lots of really good help from a lot of people here.
A lot of fun.
And Lauren Haley brought some stuff in as well.
Yes, she's quite the Mellencamp fan, really. Well, our traffic is clearing right up. We're doing about 65, 70 over there at southbound 99. Northbound 99 by Cap City Freeway and Cal Expo, we do have a three-car crash. 89, and Enid Live continues on this special edition of 9/11 at AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Exposing the right as wrong. It's Enid Live at 349-1320 on Sacramento's Left Channel.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead.
See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
It's her opinion, and you're entitled to it. Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
On the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 7, 3 to 7 weekdays on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. From 9/11, this has not been talked about very much, but there were some taboo photos that sort of by agreement were not used, almost iconic photos. One was, it was shown briefly and then shelved. It was pictures of people jumping out of 9/11, out of the World Trade Center towers. It's probably so painful. It's probably so horrible to see this. And I could understand that sentiment if the smoke is building and you haven't, I mean, think about what that must have been like. You call 9/11 and they say, we can't give you permission to shatter the glass. We can't tell you what to do. They had nothing for you. They didn't have it. They didn't know and they didn't have anything for you. It's kind of like this administration, which if terror happens, we're probably on our own. You know, it's duct tape and that and blue plastic tarp. That's pretty much what, you know, be sure you have a lot of water. And living in earthquake country, you're always supposed to have a lot of water. People do. People keep their cars mostly filled with fuel. And so, you know, batteries and so on. The thing, but the other taboo photo was not showing. They showed it at first, and then it was too horrendous. And then that you don't see it. People jumping out of the windows of the World Trade Center. The other taboo photo was the next day, on 9/12, people sitting there having a picnic with the billowing smoke in the frame. In other words, completely oblivious. The two ends of 9/11, and you didn't see that one either because it looks like we're really insensitive. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. If you listen to Dickie's speech and my commentary under it, you may wish to comment. Also, Frank Rich had a column, and I always like to read his stuff in the Sunday New York Times. And he's talking about whatever happened to the America of 9/12. That one of our traits in our resilience as a country is forgetfulness. But he talks about that there was, on the very next day, Bush was asked at a press conference how much of a sacrifice ordinary Americans would be expected to make in their daily lives, in their daily routines, and his answer was, our hope, of course, is that they make no sacrifice whatsoever. He wanted to see Americans move on. That is sort of the national mantra, is move on, move out, move on, we're moving on, going forward, that we're always in motion, we're always, forget about the past. It doesn't exist, we're moving on, we're moving out, we're moving forward. Frank Rich writes that selfish agenda was there from the very start. This idea that we want to prevent ourselves from sacrifice, we want to prevent ourselves from anything that is hard or effective, and that's with an A, that we feel. In other words, depression, we have pills to combat depression, we have pills to combat anxiety, we don't want anybody to sacrifice, we want it all to be goody-goody, nicey-nicey, and easy-easy, easy-breezy. And the thing is, where you grow, and where you develop muscles, and where you develop character, is when you've been through things that are difficult. Nobody wills those things to happen, but I don't see how you can live a life without encountering those things. And if you try to take the easy road, I don't think it really works for very long. There are some people I know who've managed to get away with it for a fairly long period of time, but I have no doubt that the universe will catch up with them one day, and when they do, when it does, it'll be accrued interest that they'll get slapped in the chops with. And then there are the rest of us who, even when we try to take a shortcut and we try to sweep it under the rug, life doesn't let us do it. It forces us to confront these things. And the more we're able to confront all these issues, anxiety, depression, anger, the issues for which we must sacrifice, the wiser we become, because that's where wisdom happens. Although I don't know that we make a distinction anymore between, we get it all confused. Information is sort of lumped in the same category as wisdom, and they are not the same. Wisdom has to do with those deep insights that you learn. Information is just information. But wisdom, how you make the right decisions, how you live a life that has meaning, how you live a life, meaning particularly comes when things are forged, and it has been difficult. When it's been really easy, you just sort of blow it off. It's like, oh, well, that was easy. You don't appreciate the thing that you have until very often it's gone. But when it's difficult, when you've really had to do something difficult, you appreciate it. You've grown in the process. Maybe it wasn't maybe it wasn't a lot of fun to do it. But when you look back on your life and you look at the times when you've really grown and developed, it's often through difficult times. If you can just hang on, if we can all just hang on by our fingernails, as bad as it is on one end, it's as good as it is on the other. And so one of the things I like to tell myself when things are difficult and when they are not easy, I like to think of it as money in the bank. Because it means that as bad as it is right now, here and now, it's as good as it's going to be at some other time. And there's not a, you know, it's not like today it's going to be bad, but tomorrow it's going to be good. It could be a long time away. But then one day, you wake up and things have been really, really wonderful for a while. And you remember that things were really, really bad a while back. Maybe a great while back. And you see how the balance happens. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. So for Dickie to doesn't want anybody to sacrifice absolutely misses the point and is probably one of the things wrong with that child rearing in that family. And the presidential press secretary then, Ari Fleischer, condemned, if you recall this, Bill Maher's irreverent comment response to 9/11 by reminding, quote, all Americans that they need to watch what they say, watch what they do, fear itself. The fear that paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. Watch what they say, watch what they do. And if we aren't going to watch what we say and watch what we do, believe me, the administration is in there doing that for us. 349-1320, 866-626-1320. I'm Enid Goldstein, and you're listening to the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Time to check traffic and weather together from the left with Lisa West.
Thank you very much, Enid. Our weather, nice, breezy tonight. It's just going to be beautiful to stand outside and hang out. Right around 89 we're sitting at. Our traffic, southbound 99 Fruit Ridge Road, seems to have always some traffic hazards and accidents. Nice and clean, 55, 60 miles per hour. Elko Boulevard has a three-car crash. It looks like emergency vehicles are taking care of that. And northbound Cap City Freeway, just past Arden Way, we do have a two-car crash there as well. I-5 looking clean, doing about 60, 65 over there. And I-80 at Madison Avenue, we do have a vehicle in the roadway, third lane, so stay clear of that. Enid Live will continue at AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Enid Goldstein, a sign of intelligent life in the political universe. On AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Want to get to...
Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, is Showdown at Cache Creek 2. The 8 action-packed mixed martial arts match card features in the main event Mike Whitehead from Spike's Ultimate Fighter 2 against Zane Frazier from UFC 1 and 9. Plus special guest appearances by 3-time UFC champion Dan the Beast Severn and MMA legend Boss Rutten. Live from Cache Creek Casino Resort on Friday, September 15th, visit cachecreek.com for more details.
You deserve. Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Line is forming to the left. It's Enid Live on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel.
Thank you.
on the Monday special 9/11 edition of Enid Live. I'm yours for just a few minutes more, but it occurs to me that here's what we've made the world safe for pre 9/11. Lots has changed, and I don't think very much of it for the better. United Airlines.